It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. And the new Surfaces are here. We'll talk about Microsoft's hardware event just a few days ago. The antitrust action coming from Congress. Is it a threat to Microsoft? And Microsoft Cloud, it's down again. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 693, recorded Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. Greece is the word. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by ESET. ESET protects businesses worldwide with internet security products and services backed by world-class research and tech support. Get an interactive demo for your business at try.eset.com/twit and start your free trial today. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the code Windows. And by Hover. If you're streaming content, Hover is now offering .live as a domain extension. Don't create your website without it. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft.
Going through a growth?
Yeah, my voice is changing. Finally. No, it's the smog and fog and smoke from the fires. It's still terrible. The air quality is about 100 here, which is, you know, it won't kill you to go outside, but you end up sounding like me. That's Paul Thurrott. He is breathing freely back again in Lower Macungie Township in the Lehigh Valley.
The air is clean, I can say that.
I bet it's fantastic. I'm so jealous. And even Mary Jo Foley in her Manhattan flat is probably breathing a lot easier than I am.
I'm sure. Our air quality has been really good since the start of the pandemic.
Yeah, because nobody's going anywhere, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sad to say traffic is now back to normal in California.
It is here, too.
Yeah, that's too bad. I was hoping it would stay like that. Just work from home, can't you?
I know.
Between Paul and Mary Jo, I think there's nothing they don't know about the doings up there in Redmond, Microsoft. Mary Jo Foley writes all about Microsoft.com for ZDNet. Paul Thurrott's at Thurrott.com. And did they do a stream of the new Surface hardware? No.
Nope.
Because we would have covered
it. Not a presentation.
Did Panos Panay jump up and grab Paul's Surface and say, here, take another one?
No, he said he was pumped in a very lackluster way.
I'm so pumped.
You know, it's spreading.
I'm so pumped.
Did you get a chance to watch Google's thing last week? Well, you came right after it. It was like so low energy.
Yeah.
I feel like
it was
spreading.
30 minutes. And I don't know. Every year I've bought a Pixel phone, you know, so this is the first year I haven't pre-ordered one.
Me too.
I did buy the other stuff, though. I bought one of those Chromecast
Me
things
too.
And the speaker.
And I like it.
Yeah, it's nice.
How's the speaker?
They're actually, so I've been doing these tests. I got to say, they're not as good as like the IKEA Sonos speakers that I have, but my daughter has these first or earlier gen Sonos ones or whatever they're called, Play Ones or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, they do sound better than those.
Well, that's pretty good. They're about the same size.
Yeah, like they're pretty good. I mean, you know, yeah, they're nice, a good price.
But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, it's not.
No.
Let's talk about. Actually, I was waiting to talk to you guys about this new Surface Pro X, because I was so tempted to buy it last time, but having had some experience with the Surface Go, I was reluctant.
Yeah. It's not like the Go. It's a laptop, right?
Right.
It's not a two in one. I mean, it's not a two in one though, right?
So he's saying Surface Pro X, not
Oh, Pro X. I thought you said the Surface Laptop Go.
No.
So
wait a minute, which confused me. And I understand your confusion because the Surface Laptop is now the Surface Laptop Go. The Surface Go is really more like the Surface Pro X. I'm very confused.
So the big thing that's going on here is that Microsoft a couple of years ago had like three Surface models. Today they have like 13. So it's they've really kind of expanded it out. I understand why they went with the Go brand on the laptop because they already have a 13-inch one and this is a 12.5 and it makes it seem like why would you have both? But it's kind of a different class of device. But as far as Surface Pro X goes, honestly, it's not a new device. So it's literally the device from last year. They have one new color, Platinum, which I think you can only get on the highest end configurations, which have the new chip. But the new chip is based on the new Qualcomm chip, which is the ECX Generation 2, which is not a particular improvement. So I wouldn't say that much has changed year over year. 6 months from now, if 64-bit app compat works, I mean, we could have a different conversation. But I think as of today, I wouldn't, if you were, you know, however you felt about it a year ago, I don't think anything has changed, anything material.
Okay, good. So no.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that's really it. I love the form factor.
I do too. And I hoped that they would release a Surface Pro 8 or whatever, you know, Intel chipset with that form factor. I still hope that they do this eventually. But this was not the day.
I was surprised how little they announced at this thing, to be honest. Right. I mean, we were all kind of guessing maybe they'd have the new Surface Book or maybe a Surface Pro or maybe even a Surface Studio refresh. Nope. Sure. None of those. Right.
But if you count all the mice they announced, I mean, honestly, it was the biggest Surface event of all time.
Yep. They were accessories.
So let's take a step back. How did this how did this work? So they sent you a note, as they have done in the past. They did this with a Duo saying we've got a press briefing, a video. We haven't seen it yet. Or have they released it to the public yet?
No, it's out. It's on YouTube. It's very short. It's just Panos and a couple of other people standing in a room, just quick high-level overview.
Okay.
Most of the stuff we got ahead of time this time was in the form of a lot of photos and the blog posts and stuff. So it was – I mean, it wasn't like a virtual or digital event like the Google event at all or like the Apple event or the, you know, whatever or like Ignite or anything else you want to compare it to. It was – it's just a short, I was a very, what do you call this? Yeah. It was almost like an offline event. I was kind of.
I know. It was. Yeah. I mean, the way they announced it was through a blog post. I mean, it wasn't like any kind of thing where you could point people and say, okay, there's an event. It's happening at such and such a time. Nope. It was just a blog post that came out at 9 a.m.
Yeah. But did it warrant more? No. I mean, really, that's.
Not really.
I will say this, though. You know, I've been very critical of Surface Go, which is the mini tablet thing, the 2-in-1.
Right.
Surface Laptop Go is the product that thing should have always been. It's it was interesting to see Microsoft explicitly and implicitly compare it to Surface Go as they described it. They said that this thing is powerful enough for almost anybody, even in its base configuration, which is something that you cannot say of Surface Go at all. It has a full size keyboard, something that is not the case with Surface Go. It's a good price too. It starts at $549. When you add up the price of an entry level Surface Go with the keyboard cover, the type cover, you know, you're basically at the same price point. I mean, this is a much better device for virtually anyone. The one exception would be someone who, for some reason, is that weird combination of I want to be able to draw on the screen and have no money to spend, you know, or whatever, which is kind of a weird deal, but.
You know what I thought, though, was a little underhanded on their part was the base level configuration, the 549 one. So that's very different from all the other ones, right? It doesn't have a fingerprint reader, which is all the other ones do. And it has eMMC storage, which the other ones don't. And it comes with 4 gigs of RAM, right? And everybody's like, really?
Yeah, it's funny. I agree.
So, yeah, but so does, I don't know. I feel like that configuration, so like... Yeah, but who is it for, right? Who is that one for?
Well, I would say that configuration
is for schools that would buy a Chromebook and instead they buy a Windows machine.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, go back in time.
Are Chromebooks a lot cheaper than that? No?
There are $300 range low-end Windows computers, which are garbage, and Chromebooks, which are probably garbage. But this, they make a good case for something that might last a little longer and be a nicer device. And certainly, you could spend $1,000 or more on a Chromebook if you wanted to. Right. I mean, this is this is a good place for them to land. I agree with you that the entry level configuration isn't good enough, but there were so many problems with the entry level Surface Go configuration.
Yeah, that's
this
true.
Time it's like, okay, just, you know, upgrade to the next one up. It's the right
$100 more
factor, the right device. You know, it's a good price point for them. And I think it's going to open up Surface to a much wider range of people.
Yeah.
I love the fingerprint.
Are you going to review one?
See that. If they offer it to me. I mean, they haven't. So, by the way, I don't know anyone that has one yet. But
I know they've started offering them to people. Sure. But, I don't have one. I haven't been offered one. So,
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I think it looks great. I just want to sort of highlight this because I've been very critical of Surface Go for what I think are perfectly valid reasons. I look at this and I think this is the right mix. Like, this is the things that were wrong with Surface Go were fixed with this. And this is the product. I know they love this 2-in-1 tablet thing, but
I know
this is the right
form. That's the wrong form factor in my mind for education and for first line workers. Like, it should be a clamshell laptop. It should.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you build to order and make it a little more powerful?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So what's
There's
the
a whole line
thing,
by of
the way, if we update it, what's the top price? Like, can you make it usable, I guess?
Yeah. So the very top end model for a consumer is $900. It's a Core i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 memory. That's
decent.
Yeah. Yeah. And that includes fingerprint reader and, it comes with Windows 10 Home and S mode, but you can switch out of that to regular Windows 10.
And importantly, I think all models come with Core i5.
Right.
There's no Pentium nonsense. There's no Core M, whatever.
That's good.
Core i5.
That's good. Yeah.
Exactly right. And that's a big part of the, you know, the form factor, the internals, the display, the size of the keyboard. All of it. They just kind of landed in the right place. And Surface laptop is a great form factor. I know it's yet another laptop and blah, blah, blah. But if there are people on the Windows side to kind of look at a MacBook Air and think, man, I really like to get one of those, but I want it to run Windows, and that's what Surface laptop really accomplishes.
For a lot less. I mean, the lowest price MacBook Air is like big 12.
Now, by the way, we all know Apple's got some Apple Silicon-based MacBook coming soon.
And that's one of the reasons they did
it. It will be close.
Now,
but you know what? It's not going to start at $549. You know, $799 maybe. You know, we'll see. But
yeah, Microsoft doesn't need to start. I mean, Apple doesn't need to start at a low price.
No.
Like that.
Yep.
No.
I like this thing. I like the way it looks. It's got kind of a playful kind of thing to it. If you look at the screen closely, the screen corners are curved.
Yeah.
They're not sharp 90-degree angles.
I love that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty. Even the speakers curve, folks. They love rounded rectangles.
I like that they put
a fingerprint reader.
And Paul was saying the fingerprint reader is really good.
I think it's the right choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the first Surface PC to have an integrated fingerprint reader, I think. Certainly the first portable one. I know there was a type cover back in the day for Surface Pro that had this, but putting that in the keyboard, which is what a lot of PC makers do. If you buy PCs from Lenovo, Dell, or HP, or whatever, they offer both the fingerprint reader and the facial recognition, and I think that's key to have both, because you can choose. You could use both, I guess. I prefer fingerprint reader because it's so explicit that you want to sign in. Yeah, I don't necessarily sit down and have it just pop up.
So it still has the camera-based Windows Hello, but this is in addition to that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
That's common on the PC side.
The MacBook Air has fingerprint, and I really appreciate it. It's a great little thing, and it's very similar, actually. Same kind of placement. And
I like when it's in the keyboard. This is something that more and more PC makers are starting to do. HP is not 100%, but you know, a lot of their new devices do that now. Dell does that when the power button integrated, like Apple does. Lenovo, I think Lenovo's are actually still separate, but I really like when putting it into the keyboard is nice. And then I don't know if you saw it in the video, but there's a kind of a cool thing when you open the lid, there's a light on the fingerprint reader to kind of guide you to it. And then when you sign in, the light turns off and it just looks like a key.
Perfect.
It's nice. Yeah. I like it.
It's very cute.
It's a 720 camera, so it's not the greatest camera, but that's enough, probably.
Yeah. Got 720 is, and you can still find 720p cameras on premium devices.
Apple still sells them. I can't believe it.
No, if you want to look like you're coming from the past and also from the planet from Dune, this is the the camera for you.
I love it that they have both a C and an A port. I think that's smart. Yep. They're still doing the Surface Connect, but they charge on the C, right?
Yeah, you can.
If you want.
Yes, but it comes with a Surface Connect power.
It's nice to have the option. I mean, everything I have now charges.
Yeah, you can just leave one by the couch and plug in whatever you're using.
Basically,
you
know, that's what I do. I have Type-C power like everywhere I sit, and I can just plug it in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
Well, there we have it.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some accessories that
we don't have a super long show, so I'd like to really stretch this out.
You know, you're assuming a lot here.
Oh, yeah?
I can go on and on about the accessories.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Yeah,
he can.
Then we should save that. The accessories. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. Yeah. But I want to actually say hello to a new old friend, a new sponsor. But one, in fact, I was talking to the ESET guys last week, and they say we still hear from people who say, yeah, I'm buying ESET because of Leo. I used to do the ESET ads way back when all the time. For 30 years now, ESET has been a global leader, ESET, in cybersecurity. But what people probably don't know is we use ESET here at TWIT. We have ever since the beginning for our enterprise protection. That's who we rely on for antivirus enterprise. And you really need that because, as you know, almost all the attacks come through email. So you need something that's scanning every bit of traffic coming and going. As a small business, you know, we can't afford the big hardware, the enterprise, but we still need the enterprise security. It doesn't slow us down, doesn't interfere with our workflow. It's one of the reasons I've always loved ESET. Oh, and one other thing. It's up to date. It is able to block all the new threats. There's new ones every day. Ransomware. There's 0 days. Those are terrifying. Those are attacks, and there are plenty of them that are not yet, you know, nobody knows about yet, and they're already being exploited. But ESET's got a way to protect you even there. ESET's perfect for our business. It has multiple layers of protection built in. It's a very light system footprint, so you don't even know it's there. You can get it on-prem or in the cloud. I think we use the cloud version. I actually have to check with Russell. You can purchase directly, or if you have a managed service provider, an MSP, they'll sell it, or you can get it through their ESET reseller program. It's very flexible, very easy. You find the option that works for you. And what you'll love, or your IT guy will love, or your security guy will love, with ESET's Security Management Center, you can look. You get a real-time overview of all your on and off-premise endpoints. Now, a lot of them are off-prem, right? All your employees, just like us, they're all at home. We can still protect them. That's really important to me. There's full reporting. There's automated security management for all the operating systems. You can access it anywhere you have internet. Russell is very seldom on site, but he is monitoring it all the time. I can log in too. And by the way, ESET has a new product that is really incredible. It's Dynamic Threat Defense, they call it. It's another layer of security for ESET products like their endpoint and mail security. It uses, and this is the way to do it, a cloud-based sandboxing technology. And that's how they detect these never-before-seen threats, these 0 days. You can actually identify a suspicious program. It sucks it up into the cloud where it puts it in a sandbox. This is really cool. This happens instantly. It executes it in the sandbox, not on your server, on your hardware, in the sandbox, analyzes it, and then they see the malicious activity, they'll block it. And that's all before the malware reaches your users, before it reaches your network. This is exactly what you want. Again, dynamic threat defense. This is where ESET, they're really advanced. This will give you a better experience than any other security option. Because ESET, you know, you get what you pay for. And you can get cheaper. Nobody denies that. ESET doesn't deny it. It's not super expensive. But believe me, when we had to choose, I chose ESET for a variety of reasons, especially this dynamic threat defense. This is brilliant. It senses, you know, there's an incoming attachment. It pulls it up into the sandbox in the cloud. It executes it. It looks at what's happening. It goes, ooh, and blocks it. We've been using ESET as long as I can remember. And they're trusted by thousands of users, including state and local governments, top universities, and, of course, the biggest companies in the world and small ones like ours. Depending on what you need, ESET meets compliance requirements, wherever your business is. If you do credit cards, PCI. If you handle customer financial transactions, GLOBA, GLBA, HIPAA for processing healthcare data, all of that, ESET does. That's really cool. It will do the compliance for you. I've said this many, many times. Your employees are your first line of defense. And with a remote workforce, you need something that will work for them. And with ESET's remote workforce bundle, which protects against advanced ransomware and business data protection, along with other bundles that ESET offers, you can protect your employees no matter where they are. We, you know, every time I see Russell, I say, are we safe? Is it safe yet? And he says, yes. I said, well, we're not going to get ransomware? He says, no, we got ESET. Top reviews from independent testing labs for, and this is one thing I always loved ESET for, minimum system impact, extremely accurate detection. I hope you'll check them out. It's something I'm very grateful we have. ESET understands the security needs and concerns of small and medium-sized businesses. Trust ESET to future-proof your business. And if you want to know more, and really check out the Dynamic Threat Defense, because I think this is super cool technology, go to try.eset.com/twit. Get an interactive demo for your business and start your free trial today. try.eset.com/twit. try.eset.com/twit. ESET, they've been protecting us for almost a decade. Let them protect you too. ESET. ESET. It's at try.eset.com/twit. Thank you, ESET. I'm really thrilled to see them back at the table. I missed you. I missed you, man. Paul Thurrott is all about the accessories.
Well, I would be. If they just came out with a decent ergonomic set, but I still use the old Microsoft Sculpt, keyboard and mouse.
I hate
set.
That
but
keyboard.
I will say.
I hate that. Maybe because I just never got used to it.
Is that the one that tips in like that?
Yeah.
That's hard to type on.
Me too.
It's raised up toward you, which is the opposite of most of those keyboards.
Yeah.
I love it.
I understand why it works. I do understand why it works.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
But I just, I'm like Mary Jo. It's like,
I mean, I couldn't get used to it. I tried.
Yeah.
I started getting that. What's the back of your hand?
Not carpal wrist
or whatever. I started getting that pain in the back of my wrist, and I thought, like, this is, I got to end my career if I don't.
You were smart. Yeah,
it's been fine like ever since. You know. Anyway, they did release some new, and then I guess I'll call them updated peripherals. The big new ones. Well, to me, the biggest new one is honestly the 4K wireless display adapter. It's a little expensive, you know, $69, but this is basically a way to do Miracast at 4K. It's probably the third, possibly fourth generation of such a device. You know, they work okay. I don't do this anymore because I don't really watch on a TV when I'm traveling, but I could have used it last week, actually, because my wife and I were watching TV at night on our laptop, and I figured I'd be able to cast to the smart TV in the hotel room, but it didn't support it. One of these would have done the job, you know, but actually would it? From the laptop would have. So anyway, it's just a Miracast adapter 4K. So that's nice that they have that. There's a compact keyboard and I think a mouse too, right? Oh, no, a keypad, sorry, which is separate, which is nice. Again, it's not ergonomic. I can never use that. It kind of looks like the Apple keyboard. And then the one device they have that is actually kind of ergonomic is, in fact, it's in the name, is the Microsoft Bluetooth ergonomic mouse. I actually travel with this mouse, but now it's available in different colors.
It's pretty.
It is pretty.
It's pretty.
And then they have the modern mobile mouse. Modern is a keyword for it means non-ergonomic.
Lisa will like the keypad, the independent keypad. Yeah. She uses that all the time, the number pad.
Actually, that's one of the things I do like about the Sculpt keyboard set, because the keypad is separate just like it is there.
Yeah.
So you I throw it right in the trash.
Yeah. I throw it right in the trash. You clearly don't work with Excel. Okay.
No.
So tell me about this wireless display adapter. It's got a HDMI on one side. You plug that in your TV. And then it's got USB on Type A on the other side. You plug that
for power.
Oh, that's just power.
Yeah, you power it off the TV.
And then you DLNA to that wirelessly, and it plays back 4K. Wow.
Yeah, it's 4K. So that's a four. I guess the other ones must have been 1080p. I never really even considered that, but I guess they must have been 1080p. And if you go in Windows, Windows key plus T, P, sorry, P, like Paul, actually like project, you'll get the project pane. And one of the options there is connect to a wireless display, and that's how you can kick
it
off.
That's really cool. And it works well. And
yes.
I mean, 4K is a pretty hefty stream.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
I know. Actually, so as a random aside, because we talked about Google earlier, one of the interesting things about the new Chromecast, which is also 4K and 60 frames per second, unlike the previous version of the Chromecast, I think it was called the Chromecast Ultra 4K, that one can't be powered off a USB port on your TV. You actually have to use the bundled power adapter. So I'm not sure how Microsoft is doing this. Maybe it's only 30 frames per second. I'm not actually sure, but... it works powered off the TV, which is nice. Or you can obviously put a little plug on there if you want to put it on to power the wall.
I was kind of impressed that Google made their new Chromecast 4K 60 for $50.
I know. Mm. Yeah, the original version of that, I want to say, was $80, like
the Ultra.
A couple years ago.
Yeah, the Ultra was expensive.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm looking at the mouse on your website. You got a nice picture of the mouse. It's pretty.
Yep. I have the Surface Gray version of that mouse. It's very nice.
Do they make one for lefties?
No, Leo, they make it for normal people. No. No. You know, you can tie some splints to your hand and make this thing work properly for you.
I can't mouse
right. Yeah, no, this is always a problem. Yeah.
Hey, I'm getting a little echo back from somebody. Yeah. Does somebody have speakers?
Oh, that's actually from me. I'm sorry. Okay.
I like hearing myself over and over.
How do you fix this now? Yeah, 30 minutes into the show, I had to be told.
Oh, well, my watch just said, it looks like you've taken a hard fall. No, I'm okay. I'm okay. I did not fall.
Wow, I fixed the problem. I apologize.
Okay. Yeah. You know what I thought was the most interesting thing accessory-wise? There was no Alcantara mentioned anywhere.
Did they run out of... Canteras?
I hope they ran out of it. And I hope
those animals aren't growing fast enough.
I hope the telemetry has shown that this is not something most people want.
Oh, Mary Jo, I can assure you, without actually knowing this, it absolutely did show that. Nobody wants Alcantara.
I love my Alcantara. I love it.
I like it too, actually. But
I love it. I don't know how it wears because I never last long enough with it to.
Well, I hope you like the color of Cheetos.
Yeah. Don't eat Cheetos. Yeah.
Grind those in there.
Yeah.
That's all you're ever going to see.
Now, is this the mobile version of that same mouse? This one's agnostic.
No, this is just the modern mouse. It's just a different design for people who
are lefties.
I don't like it. It would work for lefties.
Yeah. Do not sit at a desk all day long and use that mouse. This would be a huge
problem.
No,
it hurts your hand a lot.
Oh, yeah. That's good to know.
You know, it's very light. It slips in any bag. You wouldn't even notice it.
It's kind of portable. It's like a mobile. Yeah. You know, you take it with you.
Yeah. All right. I mean, the mouse I use is like, it looks like a softball, right? It's like this giant round thing.
Yeah, I like that.
And but it's, again, I use it with a mouse pad that has like a gel wrist rest.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing, it's like a hospital room in here. It's unbelievable.
Hey, this is your living, you know?
No kidding.
Eventually I'll just be suspended by wires and there'll be no weight placed on my arms at all.
Yeah.
Mouse matters for
are trackpads bad for ergonomics?
The whole laptop keyboard and with a trackpad, yes, is very bad for it. Is it really? It's not
Yeah. It feels like it's not that natural. You know, you're
the problem is your hands naturally. Well, how can
you
I
want to
like
keep
this?
Your wrists
this is,
straight? Right?
Doing this contorts your
right.
You really want them like this, and that's why. Oh God, why not? I'll just, this is why the keyboard I have is so key. You
oh
can
my
see all the
God,
grossness.
That's-
wrist, but
it's bizarre.
I don't,
that, can't use
no,
it.
I've tried to get used
yeah,
to that.
Too.
I can't.
But
guys,
you know,
there
you guys,
there are crazier ergonomic solutions, right? This is kind of my last retail version. Yeah.
You probably type, well, I don't know, tens of thousands of words a day.
He does, not me. So
if
much,
I had but. To point, if well, I had to, I if I had to use my tongue to point, I would have to have some sort of tongue splintage to protect my livelihood.
Yeah. So the hard thing for me is when we do the home swap, which you know, thanks COVID, didn't happen this year. Gone for 3 weeks, and then I use a track or a laptop for 3 weeks, and you know, I'm like, by the end of the trip, it's like I have to kind of get up and walk around, and you know, just kind of shake it out
a bit.
But
yeah. No, I have to do like all those hand exercises where you bend your hands back and like, you know, yeah.
So you don't want to go down that path because once it happens, it's not like a cold.
It's
hard,
you can't really get rid of it. I know.
Yeah. It's always kind of there, you know.
Yeah. Lisa had surgery on one of her wrists.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they said, protect this because we can't do it again.
My sisters did as well.
Yeah,
same
only
thing.
Do it once. And after
I had it really bad when I lived in Seattle and – you know, when I got it, I hadn't had it in a long time, but the week of Ignite, it came back this year.
That's when it's going to, you were actually, so this year. Yeah, I was going to say, when you're traveling, I could imagine, well, and I have experienced that happening, like a little twinge, you know, kind of feel it.
But last week, like the week of Ignite, that was last week, right? And the back of my wrist, I was just like, oh, I was typing so many articles like over the weekend. Plus stress makes it worse too. Like when you're stressed under deadlines.
You're all clenched up. You don't even realize that you're sitting there all just you know, rigid. And
I don't think we've ever talked about this on the show. I had no idea, Paul, that you were doing
this. Oh yeah, this happened a long time. It's just one of those things like when it happened, because I tried, you know, those like Logic mice that has like a pool ball in the side.
Yeah. Do you ever use those track balls?
Yeah. I experimented with everything. And actually I used that for probably a year because if you think back, I don't have this in my head exactly, but Microsoft came out with an early ergonomic keyboard, probably in the late 90s, mid 90s, something like that. But I don't think they ever really had a good mouse until this mouse, honestly. I mean, like a true, it's hard to explain, but you just want, you know, you want your arms to be level from your body, from your elbows out.
Right.
And then you want that slight, you don't want to be like this.
Right. You want your hands slightly
straight
in.
At it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've never understood why they don't make like 15 inch laptop. You could have an ergonomic keyboard layout on there like that. I would love something like that.
Yeah. I think it's just really hard for people to adjust to it. Like, I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, I bought one in January and I gave it almost three weeks and I just gave up. I'm like, I can't.
I mean, you could. There are degrees of ergonomics. Like, a lot of the things that say ergonomic, like the Microsoft keyboards, are not really that ergonomic. But they're a start in that direction. I mean, this thing, like, again, for like a retail keyboard, this is pretty, it's not extreme, but it's about as ergonomic as you're going to get. And then after that, you have to go to specialty equipment, you know, the kind of bowled out keys where they're, you know, the two sides are really separated.
We should
talk about this someday.
You're not going to get it on a Surface Laptop Go, I can tell you that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, can you not use a laptop as a result?
No, I can, but I have to really pace myself when I travel. I've been testing this year just using a laptop, and I have it up on kind of a stand with this keyboard. And I was thinking, you know, it's only a matter of time before I have to pack the keyboard when I travel, just to, you know, because, you know, depending on how long I'm gone and how much I write it. Yeah, it's you can feel it coming back, you know. It's like the the headless horseman chasing you.
It does come back, yep.
But Mary Jo, you don't take extreme measures to protect yourself.
I don't type anywhere near as much as Paul does. Like if you look at our respective outputs, he writes way more than I write.
Well, I also make mistakes than you do too. So that adds to the, to the, you know.
No, I feel like I try to take breaks and You know what aggravates it for me, though, is cooking, because a lot of chopping.
Yeah.
Like when I had it really bad, my doctor said to me, he's like, you got to stop chopping.
Yeah.
Like
chopping and stirring, whisking.
It's like it's a repetitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that's you're breaking your wrist to do it. Yeah.
I know. And that killed me more than typing.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I can see that. Interesting. Yeah. That's one thing I do, but I still don't do it enough to really hurt myself, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly
also
I just
not
watch
carrying
TV.
Heavy things. Don't carry heavy things on that arm.
No.
On your dominant arm.
Yeah. Yeah. Lisa tore her shoulder. Carrying, you know, like a camera bag during a shoot.
Yep.
And it's never healed. But I'm telling you, my lifestyle is so safe. I just sit, I watch TV, I relax. I don't use the remote. I just watch whatever's on.
Wow. You never change the channel.
I get up.
I keep my wrists straight.
Yep.
My feet out.
Right. I leave a table there next to the couch. Yeah.
You're the epitome of ergonomics.
I don't even drink beer because that has to break your wrist.
Because you have to come to
the straw.
You flex your wrist.
Yeah. Well, I do have a little big straw. Yeah.
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 I'm thinking of getting one of those hats that has beer in it.
Yeah. There you go. See?
Yeah.
There's ways to work around any problem.
So you say this is a strategy do-over for Surface.
Yeah. So I sort of alluded to this earlier, but whatever year they released Surface Pro 4 in the original Surface Book, this was the Thunderstruck video, remember? And they really made a push at that time for the premium PC segment. And that was where they were going to be. Like all those products were very expensive and there were only a couple of them, you know, they really didn't have too many different models. And, I sort of understood that in the sense that Microsoft was still dealing with criticism that it was competing with its own PC maker partners. There were still lots of bad feelings in the PC maker space about them entering the PC market. And this was a way to build kind of aspirational devices. They were allowing PC makers to kind of copy their designs and sell versions for lower prices and all that stuff. And I thought, okay, well, that's a strategy, you know, I mean, whatever. But if you flash forward to today, however many years that is, 4 years, 5 years, whatever. I mean, it's incredible. Think about all of the different Surface PC models there are today. Just Surface Laptop, which didn't exist 3 years ago. There's a Surface Laptop, a 13.5, a 15, and now a 12.5. You know, there are three of them. Mm-hmm. It's different colors and all these configurations and stuff. But, you know, Surface Book, same thing. That there was one version a few years ago, and that was two. And so between those two product lines, that's five laptops. It's crazy. They didn't even have a laptop until fairly recently, you know, so they've expanded the Pro form factor with not just Pro, but Pro X and also with Go for the low end. And I think that's part of this strategy shift is not just more devices, which reaches more people, a broader audience, but also the resulting lowering of prices, not just at the low end, like Surface Go and Surface Laptop Go are inexpensive, you know, relative to the other Surface devices. But the starting price for like a Surface Pro, like I guess it's a Pro 7 today, or at launch compared to what it was when Surface Pro 4 came out, it's at least $200 cheaper than it was at that time. So, I mean, that's definitely a strategy shift because they were going very much at just the premium market. They haven't left that behind, mm-hmm. but now they've expanded it to a much broader audience. I think it's smart because you have products that people can get into your product line at a lower price and it might have otherwise been unaffordable. And if they have a good experience, which you know you hope they do, maybe next time they'll buy a more expensive version.
I feel like this changed, I don't know how many years back, like maybe a year or two back when they seem to have decided remember when we were always talking about, do they want the OEMs to copy them? Yes. Right. Like they want to be like setting the standard and having people copy their designs. Then I feel like right after that, there was a shift where they decided we're going to try to turn this into a real business and not just try to be the high end premium player, but we're going to actually compete. And I would say that dated back like a year or two ago when they started
you're right. You're right. Okay. It's not completely new, but now it's kind of expanded out to the point where it's like, okay, look, now it's the whole Surface Go. I think when it first came, it was a little confusing, right? It's like, what is this little thing that is underpowered and looks like Surface Pro, but isn't, you know, but now it's kind of matured a bit, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest this is something that happened last night or something, but yes, it's clearly there was a line at some point.
Yeah. You know what makes this more interesting? So if they were just still in the market of saying, we're going to make reference designs and we're going to only touch the premium end of the market, you know, making Panos the head of Windows client wouldn't have been a big deal. But now they're out there competing with their own OEMs, right? Like, it's
pretty out there with that. It's like they can't get past that Apple envy part of what Surface really is, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But yeah, there are good reasons for the guy, you know, the company that makes the software to make the hardware. I mean, I get all that stuff, but and Brad was the one who said this first, but I was talking to Brad about Surface Laptop Go, and he said, hey, we both agree that we think this is going to sell really well. And he's like, this is going to be how they have $2 billion quarters now, you know? So Surface hitting a $1 billion quarter was a big deal by revenue.
Yeah.
This is how you get to the next level, you know, with a $2 billion quarter.
Do you think they decided, oh, it's okay, we can compete against the OEMs and they're not going to, I mean, where are they going to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and OEMs are making Chromebooks and Linux laptops, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a coincidence. Every single PC maker on earth makes a Chromebook now, right? But the difference is now it's 3, 4, or 5 years later, whatever. Actually, Surface, it's 8 years later. Those Chromebooks haven't really gone anywhere, have they?
We're in position.
And also, until this year, and it's probably a temporary condition because of the pandemic, although I like it, PC sales have been going down. And, when the market's a lot smaller, having another viable option in a market where you're seeing lots of consolidation, PC makers are starting to disappear or merge together or whatever, merge their businesses together. I think everyone kind of understands, like, it's imperative for Microsoft to keep Windows as healthy as it can.
Yeah.
So that's, so it's really interesting because they initially, it seems like their plan was, we just want to make a reference design, kind of like Google did with their Chromebooks, where we're not for the price sensitive. We're just going to say, here's how good it can look. And let the OEMs copy it. So at some point they said, what, they went for the money? They said, oh, we're going to cash in.
I don't know what spurred it.
Yeah. I bet a lot of people provided them with the feedback of, I'm very interested in your devices. I can't afford them.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And they kind of looked at it. There are ways you can cut prices. All of the existing devices, the kind of classic now, classic Surface designs like Pro and Book, have lower end SKUs. Over time, they've done this. They've introduced lower end SKUs over time without revving the device. And that's one way. But the other way is with cheaper new devices. I feel like they kind of hit the wrong matrix of features and whatnot with Surface Go. But there's something very right about Surface Laptop Go. And maybe this is the right place for a reasonable, it's kind of a goofy term, but like an entry-level premium device, right? So a good Surface Laptop Go is going to be about $700. You could spend $700 on a Surface Go if you wanted to, right? Core M3, as much RAM as you can get, the better storage. Get a pen and a keyboard cover and all that stuff. It's about $700. But this is a much better computer at that price point.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think what they're trying to get to is they want to make a device that's like a Microsoft 365 PC.
Mm. Yes, right? There you go.
Right. They thought about this early on when they started doing the Microsoft 365 branding. Like, there were things called Microsoft 365 PCs, but then they backed away from that. But I think they're looking for that sweet spot. Like, what can we make be the premium device to deliver our services, right?
And Microsoft 365 having a diverse customer base, just like the PC in general, means that's a different thing for different types of customers. So education, you have this device, $700-ish. For engineers and for if we ever have them again, traveling workforce, they might want a laptop or a Pro 7 or a Pro X or whatever. And then, of course, you have, developers and power users that want the gamers even, I guess, who might want the book.
It's smart. I'm assuming, and I think it's the case, that Microsoft is deeply strategic, that they everything they do, this you can't say that about Google, for instance. Google's, Google has no strategy. But Microsoft, I think, because of Satya Nadella, has an overarching corporate strategic vision. And so when I would imagine when they do anything like this, they measure it against that mission statement, that vision. And it sounds to me like what my, and the only reason this is interesting, I think, to me is because I'm curious about where Microsoft's headed. And it sounds like, and this is actually fits in with what you were saying, Mary Jo, it's about brand. It's like we want to have a brand that works in every context. We don't want to be the Windows company.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They don't want people Microsoft to call Windows PCs. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That's
by the way, there's an all access program. You can subscribe to these devices too. I mean, you own it at the end of the 2 years, but you can kind of look at it from both directions. There's probably a much higher attach rate to Microsoft 365 on customers who buy Surface PCs. But on the flip side, there's probably, you know, you can make this argument, well, any Microsoft 365 customer is a good customer. Sure. They could be running HP computers, Dells, whatever. But what if we could get them on this monthly attach, right? Where now the price goes up because you're paying for hardware that way. And I think that makes the Surface lineup, just like they're doing with Xbox, same thing, right? It makes it more appealing to a company like Microsoft because you don't get this big one-time purchase. You're spreading it out over 2 years, and that's how they like to get their revenues.
But I don't, you know, and so sometimes people say, "Oh, well, that's they're copying Apple because Apple's brand is definitely strong." But I don't think I think it's a much more subtle thing they're going after. They don't. Apple's brand is very concrete. You know, there's a very kind of almost linear product line. Mm. Microsoft's much more diverse, and so I think that they just want a strong brand within that diversity. They're not trying to create an ecosystem, in other words, particularly. Although as you say, it's beneficial to them to do that. But
I mean, when Surface first started, it absolutely was born out of envy of the Apple ecosystem and the way that Apple does things, the combination of hardware and software. And there's just no refuting that. It's a fact. But yeah, things have evolved. I mean, I think that kind of thinking inside Microsoft is probably not very attractive to a lot of people. And so the argument that Panos or others probably have made is simply like, look, it's a micro, like Mary Jo said, it's a Microsoft 365 device. I mean, that's how you get something like this to expand, not just to continue but to become a bigger deal. And, we're almost not speculating, but kind of guessing a bit about how this all came about. But to me, this all makes sense. And it makes sense of the product line. Like, why are there so many of these things? Why are they willing to compete with their PC maker partners today? Because it's not like Windows exactly. It's not the devices exactly. It's this broader Microsoft 365 piece.
Should I buy a Surface Pro X? I know you love this laptop. Go.
I would wait. And this is what I would wait for. Sometime this fall or by the end of the year, they will be available in pre-release the ability to run 64-bit x86 apps on those things, right, through the Insider program. Mm-hmm. Let's see what that looks like. The problem is running 32-bit x86 apps on these devices is not always great. And my expectation is it's not going to be great. But I would at least wait to see what people have to say about that. I wouldn't get it now. I'm with you. I love the form factor. I wish that was available in an Intel version. I would probably buy it immediately. I love it. But I still feel like that platform is still too compromised.
Yeah.
By the way,
the battery life is terrible.
Is it?
On those things.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
Well, compared
it should
to
be through the
other
roof.
ARM devices.
That should be an always on device.
It's not 25, it's 15 hours.
Well, that's still all right.
They say it's 15, so I think it's 7. Yeah.
You think it's less?
Yeah, you probably. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, it's probably
it's also pricey. I mean, it starts at $1,000.
It's $1,000, yeah.
Yeah. It needs a better chip, right? Like Paul said at the beginning, this SQ2, it's not really that much of a jump, right?
No. I on the Qualcomm side, I want to say the performance difference was like 10%-ish. It's not a big change.
By the way, one thing you might like about it, it still comes with an Alcantara covered keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, there's that. Well, I'm going to get the one that's Cheeto colored. That way.
Yeah. Save yourself a step.
Save myself a step. Go right to orange.
Cut out the middleman.
No, I spec'd it out. Top of the line, SQ1, 16 gigs, 512 storage. You got to get the keyboard. I mean, what's the point of it without a keyboard? That's another $269. It's almost $2,000. It's $1,867.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
That's before
if you would hand, if you handed me that much money and said buy a Microsoft product, hardware, I would probably look at this 15-inch Surface laptop, and then I'd see how far you could go with Surface Book. But I bet I'd end up with a laptop, personally.
I just like the form factor.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's an issue if the processor, and I have a Surface Go. I should be learning my lesson here.
Right. You should.
Well, by the way,
it's so bad.
So Surface Go, right? That was originally supposed to be an ARM device, and it's not. And that should tell you something too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. With tax, it's over $2,000.
That's tough.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot for something that's like kind of experimental, right?
No, it's $2,000, but it runs a lot of the apps you want to run. You know, it's like, and slowly. I don't know.
It's this Windows on ARM thing.
Windows on ARM needs more work. Yeah. It's not ready.
They'll get it there. Every year there's improvements. I mean, it's weird to me that they went live with it when they did. I feel like right now might even be too soon for them to release this to the public. I hope that people who buy a Surface Pro X understand what they're getting into and can live with those compromises. But next year, we'll see.
I need a Windows laptop. So there are other companies. In fact, we're seeing, I don't know why, but there are a bunch of laptops that were announced this week too. Is that because this is a big buying season?
Holiday? Yeah,
well,
you'd think do it before school starts. That's when you want to do it, right? Holiday. Who buys a PC for Christmas?
Every year. So there's an IFA thing in September. And those are really for the holiday season, not back. Back school starts in June, right? No one's shopping for a back to school PC in September, October. But, remember this year has been a weird one because of the pandemic, and PC sales are on the rise.
Right. So they can jump on that.
I want to cry because the PC sales are so excited.
back to 1992.
Yeah, so I will say, one of the weirdest things about 2020, aside from all the obvious stuff, I mean, for me and my job, is because PC makers don't have those couple of big bucket events, right? The industry-wide events like CES and IFA, and then the events that they would normally have where they'd have like an all-up event. You go to New York and see a bunch of different stuff at one time. I feel like every second or third day there's a new PC released or announced, or there's a briefing for one or whatever, and it's a bit of overload for me. More than a bit. It's been a big problem. And I was away last week, and so I didn't cover this as I would have normally. But, you know, Lenovo and Dell and HP all announced some stuff, you know. And some of it's crazy stuff. Like,
Look at this Lenovo. Does this remind you of anything?
So speaking of spending $2,000. Yeah, but you know what's interesting about that device is that nobody should ever buy one. Because look at this thing.
So here's by the way, for those not watching but listening, it looks like a big Surface Duo. It's a book. She's even holding it like a book.
Yeah, and by the way, I refuse to believe that that woman can hold that thing in her fingers like that.
Because I know, me too.
Even
the Duo is heavy like that. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. She's got a Paul Thurrott-sized crane.
It's like half an inch thick.
Yeah.
It's a big device. And so, you know, first gen tech, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
And then it turns into a keyboard if you want it to be a laptop, right? I mean, it's a glass keyboard.
Yeah. And actually, like the Neo, remember, there's a slide-in keyboard connector as well. It's a physical keyboard. Yeah. And like, that's interesting. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
How about the Nano? It's an X1, but it's only 2 pounds.
Yeah,
what is this Intel Evo platform of which you speak again and again?
Yeah, so this is what used to be called Project Athena, I think. Mm-hmm. Was that the name? Yeah, I think it was Athena. And basically what this is, it's kind of a spec. It's a light spec. In other words, like The PC meets certain criteria with regards to performance and standby time and connectivity. It's Wi-Fi 6. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's just what you're basically getting there is a premium PC experience as it is today in 2020.
Is it Ice Lake or is it later? Isn't there something
after? Is it dependent on the chip or not?
There was a baseline.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So processor. Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. Yeah.
Off. Okay.
It's like an ultrabook, future ultrabook spec.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, again, these things are so vague. They go by and then we forget about them. But
yeah.
It's meant to ensure that when you see this logo in a box, not that any consumer would even understand it, but that you're getting the most modern components you can get. Like there's no surprise it's eMMC storage. You know, it's right. All high-end stuff. It's, you know, the SSD, the processor, like I said, the power management, standby specifications, all that stuff is, you know, connectivity. It's all modern.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They need it to stand for something consumers understand, though, if they want to call it Evo.
Evo is like evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. I love those HPs. And I know, Mary Jo, you used to now.
I do.
Now you're.
I still do.
Yeah.
Still do.
This Elite or whatever is 360 Spectre.
So the Elite Books nice. X360 14. So this is a 3x2 display. They finally did it.
Yes. That's the right thing to do.
Badgering these guys for like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And beautiful, right? I mean, this is not part of this announcement, but I mean, the other thing that's happened this year that I think is kind of interesting is HP certainly and. Probably, yeah, Dell and Lenovo are all releasing AMD variants. The 4000 series chips are fantastic. A lot of those things are really inexpensive. So you can get like an HP. It's not an EliteBook. What is the HP? It's a...
yeah.
No, maybe it is an EliteBook. But whatever. Spectre? One of the premium HP brands is available in AMD configurations. And they're cheap. They're like $700-$800. Awesome. Like they're just awesome. Yeah, you know, fingerprint reader integrated in the keyboard, beautiful displays, excellent keyboard and trackpad. Really nice.
They're all evolutionary, hence Evo. But
they are all evolutionary, except for that weird ThinkPad thing, which is last year and it was gonna come, remember, with Windows 10X. Yeah. And then over time, they're like, well, there'll be a version with 10X, and then we'll do one with Pro. And then they're like, I guess there'll be one with Pro.
Yeah, 10X, maybe not. Yeah. Right. We think 10X for dual screens is not until spring 2022. So it's running late.
2022?
For dual screen. For single screen, maybe spring 2022.
Seriously, we can sort of make fun of them for that. And by the way, if you want to, I can go down that path. I'm happy to do it. But given what's going on in the world with the pandemic and everything, and there's no end in sight, I mean, I think pushing traditional form factor PCs at this time is the right thing to do. It's what people want. It's what the market is demanding. And you know what? Give them time. If Windows 10X is going to be for dual displays or is going to be a thing regardless, obviously needs more time in the oven. They have that time now. Just like there's no reason to ride them for it. It's fine. Like we just need stuff that works at this point.
Yeah.
Here.
Look at you being all like sane and like realistic. Is this the Paul Theron?
I have been humbled by the pandemic like everyone else, maybe, Joe.
Don't listen to him. It's the dexamethasone speaking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the drugs help.
I know. Yeah. There's a real answer but it's...
what I have at the end of the show, you'll see also helps, and we'll get to that.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, okay. Exciting. Another cocktail, I hope.
You're not going to believe the stuff I pull up with this whole segment.
Very nice. I want to take a break. Let's do the new Windows 10 build for the dev channel.
Okay.
And maybe a break after that.
Okay. So this just came out right before the show started. Dev channel is the fast ring. So there's a new build out. And one of the interesting things in this build is there's another new optional screen that they may or may not add to the out-of-the-box experience that says customize your device. So it asks you as a user, what do you mostly use this PC for? And the choices are things like gaming and creativity and education, entertainment. And if you do opt to pick one of these things, instead of hitting the skip button, you'll get suggestions from Microsoft about tools and programs that they think you should use and add to your device. I've already seen a lot of hate for this on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's optional. there's a skip button, at least for now, in the way this is being designed. So if you are one of those people who are like, nope, then just you hit the skip button.
It may not happen too, right? I mean,
it may not happen. Right. Right.
Yeah.
It may not happen.
Random aside related to this, this is the time of year we get a lot of new devices around the world and testing different things. And I'm kind of reminded, whether it's a computer, a smartphone, a smartwatch, a smart speaker, you know, whatever it is, there's this stuff that has occurred over the past several years that I find a little troubling. So one of them is every single thing you buy now needs a software update the second you get it. So if you thought you were going to take it out of the box and start using it, you're going to have to relax. Go make a cup of tea. Yeah. It's going to download the software update, install the software update, then you can get going. But the other thing that's really troubling is a strong word, but it's really strange. The setup experience for all of these devices, all of them, is unbelievably long. Like there's even like something like a Mac. Like you would assume like if you bought a Mac, it's going to be super simple compared to Windows. No, the setup experience has at least 27 steps. It's unbelievable. Like all the stuff you have to step through. And I know like, because I talked to the people that did this, like one of the big goals between say, you know, Windows 95 and Windows, I don't know, Vista or 7 or whatever it was, they tried to cut back on those steps to, you know, to so you could get up and going as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I think they went a little too far. There are things you don't get to input like the machine name or, you know, or whatever like that. I feel like should at least be an optional thing you could do in setup. Like you have to know to do those after the fact because they just got rid of it. But this thing. This is part of that movement, isn't it? Like, let's add a bunch of crap right up front.
I know.
And I guess the thinking is like they'll optimize your PC. Like you say, you're going to use it as a gaming PC and they'll what strip down the services and do stuff for it. Like, okay, I guess so.
I know. But
I just, this has the feel of something that could explode out into just too much more stuff. And we'll see. Right now it's nothing, but.
Right. Plus, if you see this screen, like if I saw this screen, I'd be like sitting there debating, which one of these do I check? Do I check entertainment or school or do I check business? Like, what do I check? Right. I think you can select multiple ones, maybe.
There are things in Windows Setup today that blow my mind. Like, do you want to set up another keyboard? What?
Yeah. I know.
Who wants to do that? What are you talking about?
And then there's all like, the legalese ones, right? Like the privacy ones and all that. There's all that screens that you have to step through. And I'm like, wow, it's a lot. It is.
I feel like this all needs to be rethought. You know, it's like when you call a bank or any place and it's, you get this 30-second Spanish thing so that you can skip by it and get to the language that you speak. Like, is there a, can we standardize this in some way so that if you do need Spanish, we know to press one or something or whatever.
Yeah. You know they have an option or they used to where it said, do you want the custom setup or do you just want us to do the default?
Right.
Because I always pick the default, right? Like that's what I always
pick. Questions like, are you setting this up for yourself or for your organization? You're like, I don't know.
I'm kind of an
organization of one.
I know. Me too. Yeah. I don't know. I'm always I want this.
I'm sure there. I know the keyboard thing is probably related to accessibility. But again, you know, in those cases where something special is needed, there should be a way to get to something special. It shouldn't be the thing that gets in the way of the other 90-something percent of people that are trying to step through this. Anyway, this is good intention. I had that.
I think it needs more refinement.
Feeling of dread when I saw the picture. I was like, oh, boy.
I know.
Because you can picture the skeleton. The framework of possible directions this could go based on what you choose, you know?
Yep.
We'll see.
Yeah, I know. So, that's in the build.
It's the book.
It's only going out to a subset of testers today, and then maybe they'll roll it out more broadly. But the other thing that they announced a week ago that was only a subset of testers that all the dev channel is getting now is that Meet Now Skype button in the taskbar. So everybody who's in the dev channel is going to see that Meet Now option now.
Now, what about vegetarians, Mary Jo? Is there an option for them?
There is. If you don't want to ever see a meat-related ad or reference, you can click on the vegan button.
I think about that every time I see Google Meat. It just
you really
meat.
It should be bacon.
It should be bacon.
You just want to see a little dancing.
I want Google to send me bacon. I'd like to subscribe to Google Meat.
Mm-hmm. Meat of the month.
I feel like they could pull it off.
Yep. I meet daily. Yep. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to, Paul has been reading the entire congressional report on antitrust, and he has all 150 pages digested and will give us his quick analysis.
Thank goodness. Quick and easy.
You're all guilty.
We'll talk about the cloud. Actually, today the Supreme Court is hearing Google versus Oracle.
That sounds like a fiasco.
That's going to be really interesting. Yeah, Mike Masnick has a good take on it.
Who are the slowest moving entities in the world are taking on each other?
Well, this is it, I think. There's no higher court unless it's...
I saw it could be kicked back to the lower courts. Oh. I saw that. Yep.
That would be a hoot. Wouldn't be the first time either.
Nope.
Okay. Is there a vegan alternative to Alcantara? The chat room wonders.
I think Alcantara is the vegan alternative.
It's the vegan alternative to suede.
It's a manufacturer.
The sane alternative is metal.
Metal.
Go with the metal.
Aluminium.
Yes.
Or carbon fiber, depending on your point of view.
Yes.
Predilection.
Our show today is brought to you by Wasabi. It's that hot stuff you get on your sushi. No, but it is hot. It's hot cloud storage. Wasabi is amazing if you are looking for a way to replace your expensive on-prem storage with cloud storage. There are a lot of businesses, ours is one of them, where we just generate a pretty much consistent amount of data every week, those podcasts. I was talking to the founder of Wasabi, David Friend. He mentioned a high-rise in Boston that had security cams. They were saving the recordings, generated a very consistent and very large amount of data every day, every week, every month. Now, you have some choices when you're faced with that. You could go out and buy new hard drives every day, every week, every month. It's expensive, and you got to find a place to store them. But you might be saying, well, okay, I know I could do cloud storage, but is it as good? It's as good. It's as better. So let me make the case for Wasabi. Eliminate that on-prem storage. Wasabi, first of all, is one-fifth the cost of Amazon's S3, which means it's significantly less expensive than on-prem storage. In fact, typically you could store in Wasabi's cloud for less than the cost of the maintenance fees on your on-prem storage. The maintenance fees alone. Wasabi has an amazing disruptive price performance model that makes buying cloud storage just a natural. Is it as good as on-prem? Yes, it's better. It's professionally managed for one thing. All your data is hosted in premier tier 4 data centers that are highly secure and fully redundant. That's important because you don't want anything to happen to your data. Wasabi provides 11 nines of durability. 9999999. That's a lot of nines. That's as good as you can get. And they do it. Not only are they hosted in redundant tier 4 data centers, but they also do active integrity checking. Everything you store on Wasabi is checked for integrity every 90 days. So you just aren't going to lose a bit. It's also more secure. Secure by default. All the data stored in the Wasabi cloud is encrypted automatically. Even if you don't specify encryption, it just happens. They follow all of the industry's best security models and design practices. They have access control mechanisms like bucket policies and ACLs, so you can control who has access to what. Your data can be designated immutable, which means it cannot be changed, not by ransomware or malware, not by hackers, not by bad guys, not by employees who just don't know what they're doing. That is as good as it gets. HIPAA compliant, FINRA compliant, CJIS compliant. This is the way to store data. Now, very affordable. There's flat rate pricing, $5.99 a terabyte a month. That's it. Boom. No fancy tiers. And by the way, you don't get charged for egress. S3 does that. Not Wasabi. No charge for API access either. And their API is S3 compatible. So there's so many tools out there you can use. You already know how to use it, basically. So there's that flat fee, but there's another way you can go. If you know, like that high rise in Boston, well, I know exactly how much data I'm going to need or I'm going to store over the next, you know, years. You can buy reserved capacity storage as a way of reducing Wasabi's price even more. You reserve the data you're going to need in 1, 3, or 5 year increments. The more data you reserve, the longer the term, the lower the cost. So you really can control it. You can make this as inexpensive as anything. Much more inexpensive, for instance, 1/5 the price of Amazon's S3. By the way, also 6 times faster. Did I mention that? So it's faster, it's cheaper, it's safer. This is the way to store data. You just have to calculate the savings for yourself and start a free trial of storage for a month to see how well it works. Try your tools with it. Go to wasabi.com, click the free trial link, and let them know you heard it here by entering the offer code WINDOWS. WASABI.com. Yes, you can use it on a Mac. I'm just saying the offer code is WINDOWS. WASABI.com. Click the free trial link. Use the offer code WINDOWS. That's just letting them know you heard it on Windows Weekly. Join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud and do it with confidence. Wasabi.com. I actually know a lot of people using Wasabi, you know, to back up their network attached storage. There's all sorts of reasons to use it. It's so inexpensive. Wasabi.com. Offer code WINDOWS. FAMA. What's FAMA?
Like it's Facebook,
oh,
Amazon, Google, Apple.
That's FAGMA, but I'm not going to say anything about that.
Oops, sorry. Yeah. I wanted to put an M in there for Microsoft.
Microsoft should be in it, but I don't think they're talking to Microsoft.
I don't think
it's traditionally they call them.
Leo, don't worry. They're saving the best for last.
They will. Google really is the first up, right? Although, this is different fronts. There's the EU. We've already heard. In fact, they've been saying this for weeks. Any day now, the Department of Justice is going to start investigating Google, open up an investigation on antitrust. But this is the House of Representatives, bipartisan committee. This is the report we were expecting after. Remember, they interviewed Sundar Pichai and everybody but Microsoft, Jeff Bezos. So they have a big, long report.
Maybe that should be your publication, Mary Jo. Everyone but Microsoft.
Yeah.
There's Mary Jo's All About Microsoft, and then there's
everyone but Microsoft.com.
Yeah. Google, Apple, Amazon, Facebook.
Gaff. Yep.
Gaff.
And kind of like Agfa. You know, whatever.
Well, you know, in the financial markets, they call them the FANGs. Facebook, Amazon, right. Apple, Netflix, and Google. But Netflix is not under investigation. No, they're not under investigation. So, did you...
So, by the way, just a couple things about this. Because this is a 466-page report.
Really,
it's incredible.
Yeah.
By the way, really well written.
Really?
They clearly... Yes. They clearly did an amazing job of investigating these companies. Like, it's... I'll just read this little bit because this is kind of neat. The evidentiary and oversight record includes 1.3 million documents and communications, 38 witness testimonies, a hearing record spanning more than 1,800 pages, 38 submissions from 60 antitrust experts from across the political spectrum, interviews with over 240 market participants, former employees of the investigated platforms, and other individuals totaling thousands of hours. They had hearings and roundtables with industry and government witnesses, consultations with subject matter experts, and a careful and at times painstaking review of large volumes of evidence provided by industry participants and regulators. Yikes. You know, the basic gist of this is that Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Apple are all monopolies. They're all abusing those monopolies. And they spell out in intricate detail the various ways in which each of those companies are doing that thing. Interestingly, to me, and I think to people listening to this podcast, the company that is behaving the most like Microsoft did is Google.
Yeah.
You know, go figure.
Yeah.
We call it pulling a Microsoft. But the recommendations they have are really interesting because they specifically mention structural separations, which are breakups of these businesses. And In some cases, they're retroactive. Like there's talk of pulling away acquisitions from these companies. Like Facebook could lose Instagram and WhatsApp, for example. They're talking about what they call merger presumption, which is literally preventing these companies from making acquisitions in the future without meeting a very, very high bar. And then, of course, the typical business restrictions. You know, they just restricting the way that they perform their businesses, which is kind of probably where this is all going to go. But they make a compelling case that the unchecked power of these companies poses a threat to the economy and the democracy of the United States. And the most amazing thing about this, and I just love that this is the unexpected thing that I just never saw coming. And I think everyone should read this part of this. They want to restore the anti-monopoly goals of antitrust as originally envisioned at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. And this is like, I read this and I thought, this is awesome. Like, it's awesome. And again, I'd have to read this because I can't remember this, like the way they said this. It's so good. They unchecked, blah, blah, blah. It says, in the decades since Congress enacted those the foundational statutes of monopoly law, courts have significantly weakened the laws and made it increasingly difficult for federal antitrust enforcers to successfully challenge anti-competitive conduct and mergers. Subcommittee recommends that Congress consider reasserting their original intent and the broad goals of antitrust laws, clarifying that they are designed to protect not just consumers, but also workers, entrepreneurs, independent businesses, open markets, a fair economy, and democratic ideals. Yikes. This is our government. Have you been paying attention to our government recently? Because they don't sound like this. So this is amazing. So that's fascinating.
Well,
to me.
But wait a minute before you get too excited, because they haven't issued the report because the Democrats and the Republicans can't agree on what to do.
Right. So actually, this is a bipartisan thing. The majority opinion is
we ought to do something.
Is the opinion?
Yeah.
There is a minority opinion that basically what they're saying is we don't want to break up these companies. So. That's cute. But
the Democrats want to break it up. The Republicans don't. The Republicans are a little mad that there is no mention in there of bias against conservative voices.
Yeah, because that actually doesn't happen.
Because they had to ask Jim Jordan. And Jim said, well. But I wonder if the polarization in Congress right now is going to make this moot.
We'll see. We'll see. Absolutely. You know, we'll see. I just find it incredible that they actually came out and said this. Like,
it's well done, I think.
Yeah, I thought so too.
They also say that we need more modern antitrust laws to deal with this.
Oh, yes. And by the way, talk about, stating the obvious. That's been a complaint. Yeah, it was a complaint in the 1990s, look, this is true of the law in general. It just can't keep up with the rapid pace of technological invention. So. Right. The other issue, and this is part of the antitrust regulation reform thing, was there are way too many examples of when some monopoly company went to regulators and said, we want to acquire this company. It's going to give us total control of the advertising market in Google's case or the social media market in Facebook's case. And they were like, yeah, go for it. They just passed. They said, yeah, sure. Yeah. And they're like, look, we got to stop saying okay to everything. It's not always in the public interest for stuff like this to happen. The other thing, I just had a little blurb about this at the end, but obviously covering Microsoft as heavily as I do, and we do, you kind of look at the arguments they make against these companies and you think, is Microsoft doing this stuff too? And the answer, of course, is yeah, they are. They absolutely are.
Except they're not a monopoly in any market right now, right?
This is the that's the argument, right? So,
by the way, that's Apple's defense as well.
Well, they're wrong.
Come on.
They're wrong. Well, one of the monopolies that Apple has, according to the House Judiciary Committee, is on the app market, the app store market on iOS and iPadOS, right? And that's a fact. There's no doubt about it. There is no other way to get apps on these things. You can't make that claim of Microsoft with Windows because 99.9% of all apps that are installed on Windows come from the web. They don't come from Microsoft. There's no in-app payment system that Microsoft controls. There's no funnel of where apps are available through a store that Microsoft controls. It is not the same situation. So, Microsoft has 1 billion users, and Apple does too. But Apple funnels all of them through their own system, and it does all kinds of other awful things. We don't have to get too bogged down in. But yeah, I Slack has raised some issues with what Microsoft is doing with Microsoft Teams. I think the real reason that Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google are under this scrutiny, they're abusive monopolies, obviously, but they're very public consumer companies, and they impact people's kind of daily lives. I don't think people think about this stuff as much in the markets that Microsoft is strong in. It's kind of ironic that Microsoft's inability to create useful or popular consumer services has prevented it from, coming under the scrutiny. However, if regulators are successful with reining in Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, will Microsoft be something that is examined in the future? Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know that we'll see something this damning in Microsoft's case. Mary Jo, we don't have this in the notes. I don't think either one of us wrote about this. It's a little weird today that Microsoft was in the news for a diversity problem. Right? Did you see this?
Yeah.
Microsoft, the company that is, I mean, my God, is almost too, not too diverse. That's the wrong phrase. I'm sorry. They're almost, they've gone
they're
in
going
such a
way
weird
out of
direction.
Their way to be
yes.
anti-racist and diverse.
Yep.
And they're
yep.
being dinged and by the labor department.
That's what you're complaining about? Let us have our Indian CEO make a statement about that, opinion that you have about us. It's a little strange.
Yeah.
But I think Microsoft's business is, look, they're the second or third biggest company in the world. Should they be looked at? Yeah. I mean, will they suffer from this kind of
You don't want to punish people just for being successful, though.
I agree. Like, no, if you look
not,
at the market.
That's not why they're being punished. That's
no, but you know why punished. Microsoft's not being looked at? Like I said, they're not a monopoly, but their business is spread out in a very diverse way, right? Like, Google's what, like 80 or 90% funded by their advertising business. Like, there's no one business at Microsoft that's funding 90% of the company, right? It's right, really right. spread out.
By the way, yeah. nice strategy, Satya. Seriously, I mean, that goes back to our conversation about brand. You know, that's why it's okay for them to try to make money in hardware.
All of these companies either are now or were at one point one product companies, right? So Microsoft diversified off of Windows at some point, Office, Server, et cetera. Apple today is diversifying off just the iPhone. I mean, there was a point where the iPhone was over 70% of all of its revenue. So now it's, I don't know what it is now, 60-something percent probably. Google, obviously, not obviously, I'm sorry. At one point was 97% of the revenues came from ads, 97%. Today it's around 80%, right? Yeah. It's still a lot. I mean, that business, that success has allowed it to enter markets that it could never have done otherwise, et cetera, et cetera. Amazon's business, I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I want to say 87-ish percent of its revenues are from retail. 12.5% are from AWS. But from a profits perspective, if they didn't have AWS, that company would never be profitable. Right. Never be profitable. So they're all different. Facebook, like you said, whatever the percentage is, all it's ads. You know, they literally own social networking, and them pointing out that Twitter exists is like Microsoft in 1997 saying, "Look, Apple exists."
It was actually worse than that. Facebook's defense was, "Look, there's an internet." There's us and there's the internet.
Google's defense is we're one click away from, people making another choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. But when they click on DuckDuckGo, they usually end up coming back.
Yeah.
So, I guess so. But,
Of all Microsoft businesses that you could say maybe one day they'll get in trouble for, gaming, I would say.
Wow. Gaming. Interesting.
Yeah. Look,
well,
they
you
just
got
bought
Sony,
Bethesda.
You got Apple.
They bought Bethesda, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, are they cornering the market on gaming studios? I mean,
no,
there's no other part of their business, though, where you could say that. Like, they're number two in the cloud, but they're way down below Amazon.
I feel like there's an office productivity case you could make. And also, we just had this conversation, but these Surface devices aren't Windows devices, they're Microsoft 365 devices. I mean, that very thing, you could do it as a long chain of monopoly maintenance where... But the monopoly used to be Windows, and then it became like Windows and Office, And now it's like all of these online services. It's Microsoft. We're funneling you through this one thing. You know, why would you pay for Basecamp when you get SharePoint for free? Why would you pay for Slack when you get Teams for free? Why, you know?
That's what Slack's argument is in Europe, right? I mean, that's how they're trying to go at the antitrust.
I'm not saying Microsoft is. I'm just suggesting that.
Yeah.
It might make sense for them to, or it might make sense for antitrust regulators to at least examine Microsoft, just given its size. It is $1.67 trillion business. I mean, it's humongous.
Don't you think, though, there's a risk that, I mean, maybe even if we acknowledge these guys have gotten too big, too powerful,
yeah,
there's a risk of mucking it up, because you can also make a strong case that these companies, especially now, are powering the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the big three automakers anymore. It's not U.S. Steel anymore. These guys are the U.S. economy.
The natural outcome here, though, is going to be, to use your example, is going to be years down the road when Chinese technology has taken over and the United States government is bailing out Apple or something like they did with Chrysler in the 1980s or whenever that was.
Mm-hmm.
Because this business is falling on hard times, and then it gets sold to an Italian car maker or whatever it was. And then 80s and now wants it in over there. But I don't know. I mean, I mean, at some point, protectionism is just going to backfire on you, you know?
It is. And I think the biggest thing that they're saying that I agree with in this report is they need to redo the antitrust laws, because looking at it the old way, I don't agree with their idea that we need to return to the ideals of before. But I think they need to really upend what the antitrust laws are, because the way businesses work now and they're funded and they grow is so different from how it was when the antitrust laws were created.
They take a pro-U.S. stance, which is fine. I mean, we're Americans. I mean, I guess the one thing I would say is these companies are all squashing innovation because they're protecting their monopolies. And a lot of the innovation that they're killing, smaller companies are starting up in the United States that can't compete with these giants. So, yeah, I mean, some of the innovation is going to come from India and China and Africa and various places in Europe and so on, of course. But there's a lot of small companies, like a company like Sonos, for example, that kind of innovated on that smart speaker technology and setting up whole house audio, alleges that they've been ripped off by Google and Amazon, which are now selling products at a loss to take over this market and just put them out of business. Well, they're not from China. They're not even from Canada. They're from the United States.
Yeah.
You know, there are a million examples, but none of us have ever heard of, because the barrier to entry to all of the markets that these companies dominate are sealed shut. It's more than a barrier. It's just, it's over. There is no one's going to start a search engine. No one's going to make an operating system. No one's going to make an app store for iOS. These things are closed. They're it's over. So I'm not saying they have several ideas about ways we could fix this. I don't necessarily agree. I don't think breaking up these companies is necessarily a good idea. But
I don't really think it'll solve their problem, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's use the Facebook example because it's so simple. What if they literally took away Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp from Facebook? Just took them away.
Yeah.
And now Facebook actually has competition. You know, this is like the old Microsoft example. Like, what if they took Office away from Windows? And at the time, it was like, well, maybe these guys would make an Office suite for Linux and there would be competition, you know, because we don't know what they would do on their own. I mean, right now, they're part of a corporate hive mind that is everything is Windows, you know. Maybe they would go in a different direction. I don't know.
I feel like most law things pertaining to tech, if and when it's ever settled, it'll be too late.
And it's so highly politicized that you can't ascribe any given motive to any given member of Congress. And so it's just a mess.
It is.
It's just a mess.
My readers tell me that congressmen are bribed routinely by these companies.
But that's true. I mean, they all these companies have their political action committees, have lobbyists in D.C.
Totally. Yeah.
That doesn't.
That might be the biggest change in tech since the.
Yeah, they used to ignore that.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Ignore it completely.
At their peril. Yeah. And they've learned, thanks to Microsoft.
Thanks to Bill Gates.
Yep. Thank you, Bill.
It all comes back to Bill.
I don't, you know, every business, every special interest has a political action committee. I don't know that that kind of lobbying is all that it takes. Members of Congress are also aware of what the public wants and their vote and their, you know, constituency wants. And ultimately, constituency is what matters because a political action committee does not get you elected. They can give you money that will help you get elected, but it's the voters that get you elected. And so they clearly, you know, I mean, well, some of them, you know, I think Jim Jordan, it's all about censoring conservative speech, which no one's asking to be fixed except a few handful of conservatives. But I would acknowledge there are issues with these companies. But I really worry about the blunt force trauma that you could cause to them trying to fix it.
Well, ineptly. I mean, there are extreme examples. I mean, Facebook was culpable in undermining democracy during the last election cycle.
I
mean,
I agree.
I agree. At some point, you have to kind of step in.
Yeah. And again, I'd be more sanguine if Congress had a strong moral compass and was doing this for...
by the way, is why this document reads like such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
This was written by someone intelligent.
Yeah.
You know, or someone's intelligent.
Staffer, you know.
Yeah. It's well done. I mean, you don't hear these voices on the news. It's a lot of people barking at each other. Really partisan viewpoints, and I hate that stuff, but...
I think the process reads like,
this is what I want. This is how I want my government to be.
Yeah. And this has taken 18 months. They took their time. They got a lot of information.
Looked at actual evidence. Didn't just get up on some morning show on Sunday and
let's not forget they were able to subpoena email records from all the relevant companies. Yeah. They did a lot of digging.
There are so many examples in this document of Apple or Google, whatever company, every one of the companies told us that there was evidence, the evidence would prove that they weren't blah, blah, blah. This company then failed to provide us with any evidence to prove that. In fact, the evidence they provided proved the opposite. Like that kind of wording is in there multiple times. You know, that, and this happened with Microsoft too, the email trail in that case or whatever the communication trails are now. You know, their own communications internally are what proves the point they're making, which is that these guys are illegally obtaining monopolies and then illegally maintaining them.
So, we'll
see. We'll see what comes of it.
How long was the Microsoft cloud out?
Oh, man.
By the way, it's been out during the podcast. Did you see that?
Everyone's like going crazy right now because this morning there were problems with Microsoft 365 services, specifically around the admin center. Like people couldn't see their admin center, but now this has escalated and now people can't get into Teams, Outlook, SharePoint. Karsten during the show said to me, I can't get your notes because OneDrive is showing me it's down. And it looks like to me it's Azure again. Azure related, because if you look at the Azure dashboard right now, Active Directory worldwide is having authentication issues and the network infrastructure is down for Azure in all of the Americas and Azure government. So yeah, it's bad. So this isn't the first outage. Last week we talked on the show about there was the big Azure Active Directory authentication outage where people who weren't already logged in to Azure Active Directory couldn't access their services and couldn't see the messages Microsoft was sending them in the portal. And so Microsoft did a whole postmortem on that and said, you know, there was a perfect storm. We talked about that last week, right? We tried to fix it, but then the mitigation we did broke and we couldn't roll it back. And it was just like a cascading thing where you're like, okay, well, that just happened once, right? Like that's not going to happen again. Well, right now something is going on with Azure and Active Directory authentication, it looks like. So it's a really bad look when your major service, the backbone of your cloud, is down 2 weeks in a row like this. And especially because it's taking down so many Microsoft 365 services. I'm seeing people on Twitter right now saying it's starting to come back for them, but not everyone. So, yeah, not a good week or two in this case for Azure and Microsoft 365. I'm curious. You know, last week I just kind of thought it was a one-off, right? And they had a whole list of steps they were going to take to try to make sure that they didn't have this kind of perfect storm happen again. So what's happening this week? I mean, they've had Exchange Online and Outlook issues since the start of the week. People have been unable to see messages on their phone when they're looking at Outlook, and messages they're checking off as read on devices aren't showing up as read on the desktop. So there's something very wrong here. And maybe these things are all connected to Azure. Maybe they're not. Maybe some of them are and some aren't, because not all of Exchange Online runs on Azure. Only some of it does. Some of the front end services do. So yeah, I can't tell you exactly what's wrong, but I can tell you something's wrong. And if you look at Twitter right now, you can see something is very wrong with Microsoft services. Not a good look, guys. This is why they're not a monopoly in the cloud, right?
It happens to every cloud, though. It's not.
It happens to every cloud. Yeah. It does. But 2 weeks in a row with big ones like this in the middle of the workday, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's not a good look.
It's high profile, that's for sure.
Yeah.
One of the data points in that report was that AWS was three times the size of Microsoft's comparable offering. Wow. Three. Mm. Yeah. I'm not sure where that came from, but...
I know. That would be an interesting number.
They obviously didn't see the commercial cloud numbers, guys. I mean, what's up?
Well, on the bright side, Slack has added stories, so now you can waste more time at work.
Awesome.
So
they were down, too. They've been down this week, too.
I know.
Yeah.
They have.
We had a problem because we use Slack. They were. Yeah,
this is probably pre-election probing. Our whole internet infrastructure is going to go down.
Oh, man.
It's bogged down by too many people posting stories. Stop.
That's it.
Yeah, and conspiracy theories.
Golly.
Oh, yeah, and I forgot to mention, on the good news side of things, if there can be on the good news cloud, Microsoft is going to be adding some data center regions in Greece. First time they're going to have data center regions in Greece, but we don't know when. They won't say when.
Wonder if that's in response to Grecian? Do you say Grecian? Grecian privacy laws.
It could be.
You know, we're seeing that now in a lot of countries. They set up data centers in Ireland and so forth because of privacy regulations.
Right. Data residency laws. Yeah, that's why. In many
cases. I wanted to compliment Mary Jo on the headline for this because no one will see it. It's in the notes, but she wrote the headline for this is Greece is the word and the country Greece not.
Greece
we
is the word.
We have to get our little jollies in somewhere.
A data center region.
Yep.
And, we buried the lead. Bing has a new name.
This one's confusing because who cares? It's Bing. But this came up a couple weeks ago. People were seeing the Microsoft logo on the Bing website and they finally came clean. It's called Microsoft Bing, not Bing anymore. The Microsoft logo was on the webpage, but there's a new version of the old Bing logo in the, like the favicon thing you see in the tab or the address bar, whatever it is. Yeah. I don't know what they're doing. They don't know. Yeah. This is just the stupidest.
Yeah. So I think all it is, you know, they're adding Microsoft as the brand to everything these days, like not just Microsoft 365, but like when you talk about lists, they call it Microsoft Lists. They don't just call it Lists. When you talk about Teams, they call it Microsoft Teams, right? Like you never can just say Teams. They're like, you mean Microsoft Teams. I'm like, well, what other teams are there?
It confirms my theory. The branding, it's all about branding. You know, Google renamed Android TV to Google TV, which is the name it originally had until they named it Android TV. And by the way, there's still Android TV. It's not all Google TV.
I know. By the way, that's Google in a nutshell there.
It is.
So good. So you're changing it to Google TV, right? No. Android TV is still a thing.
I know. Every time you think Microsoft branding is terrible, look at Google.
Yeah.
Because they're not the worst.
Oh, they're the best. Well, I think it was us. I think we were just talking about this. Like Google has this thing where they have these online productivity apps, Docs, Sheets, and whatever the presentation thing is. That thing doesn't have a name. Like, right. You know, it's analogous to Microsoft Office.
I was telling people about that and I couldn't. Is it Docs? Is it
Google? There's no name. Well, people like, it's G Suite or, you know, it's like, no, it isn't.
It's not.
It's no name. Free people. There's no name.
It's a technology without a name.
It needs a name. Even if they called it Google Office,
right.
I don't think anyone would complain. Just give it a name.
I know.
It's so really true. I have to say these days, and I want to give Microsoft some credit because these days it's all about Plus, Walmart Plus, mm-hmm. Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, and yep. really Microsoft invented that with the Plus Pack way back, way back when.
Yes, okay.
Walmart's rebranding to Walmart Plus.
I'm pretty sure that was invented by some Arabs when they invented arithmetic, but yeah,
well,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
They were the first. I just wanted to announce we're going to do Twit Plus any day now.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's just like Twit, but it's like more.
More. Yeah. Twit Plus One.
That can be your after hour show, Twit Plus.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's what it should be. It's Twit. You got to be, so you're a Twit, so it should be Twit Plus Plus.
Twit and Plus that makes Plus.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Nice. Ooh. Right?
Yeah.
And jump on that before everyone else does.
Quick. For Apple TV
Plus. I want to subscribe to Disney Plus, but I'm waiting for Disney Plus. You know? Because you know that one. They're going to nail it with that one.
It's going to happen, guys. You laugh. It'll happen.
It's like we ran out of good ideas, so we're just...
Yep.
whatever comes off the top.
Branding is too hard. Let's just use Plus.
Now, Mary Jo said something interesting, which we were quick to argue with, but maybe it isn't so surprising that Microsoft... Are they at risk of becoming so dominant in gaming that maybe they're going to be getting a little bit of the evil eye from the House of Representatives? They had a good year.
They are certainly buying their way into the market.
Yes.
I mean, what is this, 2020? I mean, this is a decade after they entered the market, I mean, arguably. So.
Okay, it took them a while.
Well, yeah. They're slow. You know, it's Microsoft.
Slow, steady.
It turns out when you have money, you can buy stuff.
I am referring to your article about Microsoft celebrating its best year ever with the Xbox Game Studios. Somebody posted a list now of studios Sony owns, which is, you know, half a dozen. And the list of all the, you know, studios Microsoft owns now, which is several rows.
It's like twice as many. Yeah. Yep. That happened very quietly. I only became aware of that when they bought Bethesda. That was the... You know, Microsoft, I think it's like 17 studios and Sony has like six or eight or something. It's like, what's going on here? That's interesting. Well, you know, because Sony has ridden the console exclusive thing to great success. Microsoft it's a different approach. But, you know, if they can make some of the stuff Xbox exclusive, right? It's an interesting idea. The thing that I kind of took away from this was they announced this in the first week of October. So we still have an entire quarter to go. This is already the best year that Xbox Game Studios has ever had. They've had 10 major game launches this year and some big games. Flight Simulator, obviously Gears Tactics, Ori, and so forth. But they have some really neat numbers. Like, 15 game titles in 2020, 10 of which are brand new, which is a record. 1.66 billion hours gamers have spent playing Xbox Studio game titles in 2020 so far, the most ever year to date. Microsoft Flight Simulator, huge success story. And if you follow Microsoft's first-party games at all, one of the things you'll understand is that they do an amazing job of updating these games over time. We're already seeing that with Flight Simulator. This is one of the top-rated PC games released this year, Metacritic score of 92. Really well, really, really well received. It's coming to Xbox, so you get it on the console soon. And then people playing Microsoft Flight Simulator have already logged 26 million flights, more than 1 billion miles flown.
That's amazing.
To circumnavigate. Yeah, that's more time. That's like, I think it was double the flights of last year when there were flights, like real flights. So there's all this weird. I didn't put this in here. There was a statistic on. Sea of Thieves, which is a game that doesn't really resonate with me. I think it came out a couple of years ago.
No, I was all excited about it, and I just kind of was boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've improved that thing dramatically over time. They release new content, I think, basically every month. They did as recently as last week. There's some crazy – I don't want to say a number because I don't remember, but it's over 10 million people are playing this game now.
Wow.
Like, wow. Incredible. And this is like a game like, it really is kind of a, I don't mean to say it's a non-event, but it's not one of those big tier one blockbuster AAA games, you know, like Halo or whatever, but it's an incredible success story.
A lot of people want to be pirates, Paul. Don't put that down.
Yeah, that's right. Steve Jobs said it, right? Wouldn't you rather be a pirate?
Yeah.
Than be in the Navy?
In the Navy. Yep.
Yep. So there you go. And by the way, Mary Jo, you're welcome. Only one Xbox story this week.
I know. I was excited when I saw that in the notes. Wow. I was like, yes.
That's right. I dug deep. I thought about talking about the PS5 breakdown, but then I realized it'd be kind of milking it at that point. So.
You don't need that. This is Microsoft Weekly. We don't need that.
There you go.
Have you been able to get an Xbox Series X, Paul?
Not yet. I'm told one is coming.
Oh, they're going to send you one.
That's good.
Must be nice to have
January, you know. Yeah.
Must be nice to have friends in high places. I'm going to buy one. All I need, Chris Capicella, all I need is to tip. Just give me 5 minutes head start.
Yep.
Yeah, just say, time. Leo.
Get in here before 2:05 p.m.
You got 5 minutes to get to the store. Quick.
Yeah, me too. I would do it right now.
I would do it right now.
2 years of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
35
I'm
bucks.
All over it.
Gonna do it.
Yep.
$35 a month. Gonna do it.
Right now.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Since everything is measured in Dunkin' Donuts visits now, that's like 3 trips to Dunkin' Donuts.
It's nothing.
You know what I'm saying?
It's nothing. Well, you have cheap trips. And those are cheap trips to Dunkin'.
I know. Yeah,
it's 2 drinks and a breakfast sandwich with no bread. It's
easy peasy. What would the 2 drinks be, Paul?
One is this drink, the iced latte that I get that has obviously no flavor in it. And then my wife gets a hot medium latte.
Don't you get anything both for her to eat?
No, she eats breakfast in the morning. I go there after the gym, so this is my like protein stop.
Isn't that cute? He's got quite a routine. You're like the Warren Buffett of tech.
Yeah, without the money.
But even though he has the money, he still goes and gets an Egg McMuffin every morning. Even though
that's like Bill Gates, right? Like they like fly. Bill Gates used to fly coach, but he still eats at McDonald's.
If I had their money, I would have a breakfast cook, like full-time guy. All he does is breakfast.
I gotta tell you, based on our road trip last week, as exciting as it was to get out of the house, you actually do get tired of eating breakfast at McDonald's every day. Yeah. It gets old.
On the other hand, I never tire of breakfast. I think, you know,
I don't eat breakfast until.
There are many different forms of Eggs Benedict. We could just go through them all one by one. Then I would pass out and die because of all the holidays.
How about Eggs Benedict over poutine?
Oh.
Oh, man.
I've never tried that. Good idea.
It's the best.
I'm open.
You can see a picture of it on my Instagram feed. I had it on Sunday.
Benedict on top of poutine?
I'll get my breakfast man on that, Paul.
By the way, duck poutine, too. I should mention that.
Duck poutine?
Wow. Yep.
What is duck? I thought poutine was just cheese, curds, and gravy.
No, there's vegetarian poutine.
You can put meat.
If it's vegetarian, it'd be like tofu curds.
No, you can have cheese curds, but brown gravy, not made with meat, like mushroom gravy.
Of course. I must have told you I went to Quebec a couple of years ago when I was doing keto.
Yeah,
and we went to a place that was famous for poutine, and the red drink. I ordered a whatever breakfast poutine but without the fries, and the guy goes, are you fucking kidding me? He goes, I've worked here for 18 years and no one has ever asked me for that. I was like,
I've gone through. It goes by 2 minutes. I see. This is breakfast at the trap door, my friends. If you're ever in Lower Macungie Valley, you got to go to the trap door. So there's French fries. There's duck. Is there egg in
curds.
There? There's cheese curds.
Yep, 2 eggs. It's Eggs Benedict, so it's got hollandaise sauce.
Oh, my God. That'd kill you. It does look good, though.
Leo, it's fine. I had a Bloody Mary with it. It was good.
Yeah, Bloody Mary.
Perfect.
And some,
you had your vegetables.
Some bacon on the side.
Yep.
Wow. Look at that. Man, you're living large. What phone are you using to take those pictures?
That's the Samsung, the Note 20.
Very nice. Good. Did you use the food style?
So it has an automatic switch for that. And yeah, it goes right into food mode. So you get that kind of nice, you know, high warm contrast
thing. Yeah. Yeah. Scrumptious. All right.
Well, that should have been my pick.
That should have been your pick.
Poutine pick of the week.
Duck poutine.
We will
breakfast pick of the week.
Tip of the week, pick of the week. And yes, instead of beer, Paul's got a little adult libration. Is it Paul's or is it? Yeah.
Yeah, Paul. This is crazy, yeah. Leo. This is going to be weirder than you think.
It sounds very weird.
Oh, there's a backstory. It's going to get weird.
A beverage too dangerous to drink.
That's right.
But first, a word from our sponsor. Look, if you have a business and you don't have a custom domain name, you have no business having a business. If you have a name and you don't have a custom domain name, you need it. You need to go to hover.com and register a custom domain name. You know what I just got? I'm very excited about. It was very affordable. Liplock.live. I thought if TikTok is going to get banned, I'm going to own liplock.live. I'm set. The .live is a fairly new domain name. It ups the excitement of your website, of your brand. Tell the world you're live with .live. Great for campaign promotions. Connect with your followers on a deeper level while gaining more. .live is perfect for anyone that delivers in-the-moment experiences. We're .live right now. It also helps your audience navigate from social media to your website much easier. Anytime you have an announcement or a promotion or you want to share your latest contest, you go to Twitter, you go, we're live at your site here, .live. Great for broadcasting your company media, your digital events, your live video. I hope we have twit.live. Uh-oh. Quick. I love my Hover account. Hover has more than 400 domain name extensions. I've got .pizza, .ninja, .camera. You can get .republican, .democrat. There you can, and if you are a company or an individual, it's nice because most of the good .com names are long gone. Of course, Hover has those. Maybe you'll find that perfect .com. But there's still many other extensions you can use. I was looking for a domain name for my Smug Mug photography portfolio. Stumbled on leo.camera. I said, that was great. Leo.camera. Hover's so easy. First of all, unlike some of these other registrars, there's not 18 pages of upselling before you can buy a domain name. And, you know, sometimes you want to get a domain name quick. In fact, our hosts all use Hover. I have hundreds of domain names just for fun, you know, just to have them. And once you get your Hover domain name set up, they have the tools you need to manage it. They have a really nice DNS system. It's very easy. That one-click setup to a lot of the major blogs and sites and stuff. They have email management tools. This is, by the way, pro tip. Even if you're an individual and your email address is a Gmail or a Yahoo or an Outlook.com address, you really probably ought to have an address that's your own URL, you know? That way, you know, when you give it out, it's always good because you, even if you say, I don't want to be Google anymore, I want to be Outlook, you don't tell people you've changed. You just change the redirect, so clever, in your email address. You can do the same thing. By the way, Hover offers email services as well, very affordably. Their tech support's superb. I've had occasion to use it from time to time. They can answer any question. And again, and I really think that they take this seriously. No upsell. They're there to help you, to get you online. No matter what you want to achieve, get the domain name that's right for you. Automatically, they don't upsell you on Whois. Other guys do because you get Whois privacy automatically. They know you want to be private. That's built into your Hover account. Very easy UI. I do all my DNS management right there in Hover. I just recently set up my secret blog at leo.fm. You know, leo.am is my public persona, but then there's leo.fm. Got both of them from Hover. If you're interested in a domain name, check out the sales because every month they have new sales
on popular TLDs, top level domains, right now, .live. I couldn't believe it was such a good deal. Now I understand why. Big name live streamers are already using .live. You should be too. Even if it's a Twitch stream, right? You link to it with your own mytwitchstream.live. If you're a live streamer, .live is the most powerful URL your website can have. You know, we got, that wasn't around when we got twit.tv. We got twit.tv from Hover too, by the way. Visit hover.com/twit. Get 10% off your first purchase of any domain for the entire year. 10% off for the entire first year. Hover, hover.com/twit. And we thank Hover so much for their support. And I couldn't recommend them more highly. I'm a Hover guy. I just love them. Hover.com/twit. All right. Now back to Therat.live.
It's I like the AM FM thing, by the way.
Yeah, isn't that good? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have TV, AM, and FM. Yeah. Well, because Leo.com I couldn't get for a long time. Mm. The Bank of Canada had it. Then they let it slip, but I didn't catch it. And some squatter's sitting on it now. So
some stupid actor named Leonardo DiCaprio.
That DiCaprio guy is thwarting me at every turn. So I'm very happy to have AM and FM, right? Because I'm a radio guy.
That's cool. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
And it's nice if you have a domain name, you can use it in all sorts of ways. For instance, we just got a purple sensor, you know, the air quality sensor at home.
And did it like instantly start screaming?
You're dying! Get out! Get out!
Exactly. Duck and cover.
You don't breathe this air. It's crap. it did. Yeah, basically, it started screaming immediately. But it's hard. Unfortunately, the way purple works, you have to go to their map and then zoom in on your sensor. But they have an embed. And so I made a little custom web page, you know, just for myself and my family with a nice domain name that I got at hover.com. And they just go there and they see the air quality. So it's a lot easier than having to find it on the map. So it's little things like that. Once you get it, like, you come up with all sorts of ways to use it. Tip time from Mr. Paul Therat.
Yeah. Mary Jo, I don't know if you were part of this little argument on Twitter today about file extensions in Windows.
Yes.
Did you see this?
I just ignored it. I stayed out of it.
argue?
I don't know. Someone asked, you know, why on earth would Windows hide file extensions by default? To which I replied, because that they confuse normal people and they've been doing it like this for 25 years. Like, why are you complaining about this now? So I thought, in the spirit of this, I would explain to these power users how you can enable the display of file extensions in Windows. It's really easy. Open File Explorer. Click on View, which is actually a tab. I assume most people hide the ribbon in File Explorer by default, but if you don't, you should. Options, change folder and search engines. Change folder and search options. Sorry. And then in the folder options window, View tab, Advanced Settings. One of the options that's checked is called Hide Extensions for Known File Types. So one of the reasons they started doing this, aside from the obvious, right, was that people, you know, it just confused people. People don't need to see these things. Not to mention the fact that when people rename files, they would often overwrite the file extension, screwing things up. Icons got kind of nice in the 1990s, so you can tell from the icon what something is. And so the example the guy on Twitter showed me actually kind of demonstrated this nicely. It was a image.jpg. It looked, you know, supposedly a JPEG, but the icon was for a script file because that it's dangerous. So to me, like, hiding file extensions was doing its job. But look, if you're a power user, you should spend some time looking at the stuff. Obviously, you might want to show hidden files and folders. You might want to show the full path in the title bar of the Explorer window, et cetera, et cetera. You can turn off all this stuff if it bugs you. I think the only problem I have with this is I suspect this stuff does not sync. So if you sign into a different computer, you probably have to set it up manually again. Actually, I know that to be the case because there are some settings I change in File Explorer, and I have to do them every single time. So anyway, guys, come on. File extensions. Jeez.
I do the same thing.
It got heated. It got really heated.
What's the argument? Whether you should have it on or off?
You should always have it on.
Yes.
Even Father Ballister got in there.
Yeah.
What did he say?
One of the first things I enable when I install.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And on Mac, same thing.
You're a power user. Do it. Go for it.
Well, it's really important because for years, you know, the number of executable file extensions is quite large.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
.pif, for instance.
There are some weird ones people would expect. Yeah.
And if you don't see the file extensions, you don't know if that file is executable. And this is really important in email attachments. It might just say, you know, open me. Right. When it's really openme.pif, and you don't know. So, first of all, you need to know what all the extensions are. But second, you need to turn them on.
I was
going to
say, this is a rabbit hole because you could get like a PPT file or whatever.
Yeah, you might not know. Yeah, that's a PowerPoint file.
Well, you could know exactly what it is. It's a presentation file. Great. But then that thing could arbitrarily run your code maybe and, you know.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. It's not a panacea. But if you don't even know what the file extensions are, if it's .exe, most people would know, well, that's an executable. That's not a PDF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My point, though, is I think they're actually obscuring those things. And the example the guy provided, like I said, was a .jpg file, but the icon was what indicated that it was executable. So to me, like the system, you know, for most people, the system's working. It's okay. Like I don't know that I would tell normal people to enable this. Although the renaming example that I provided, actually, when you rename a file with file extensions on, the file extension is not part of the thing that gets renamed. I don't know if you've ever seen that, like if you do an F2 on it.
Right.
It's kind of nice. Like it's a nice, you know, thing.
Yeah, but it's the same on the Mac.
Anyway.
Yep.
Anyway, look, teachers on, you know.
I'm just saying, whatever. You can live in ignorance. Sure, yeah. If that makes you happy.
And I'm saying you probably should.
It makes me very happy. Like, I'm like, I don't want to see that stuff.
Okay.
I don't.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, but some of us want to know.
Like no, power users should know.
I think everybody
normal
should know.
People should not.
You're
know.
Just sticking your head in the file extension sand.
No, whenever somebody sends me something and there's a file extension I don't know, I Google it immediately. I'm like, what is this?
Yes.
Like,
yeah. No, I don't know what this is.
Yes. That's good. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a good approach.
All right, Paul.
Okay.
Good tip. What about app?
I guess. So this week, the app pick is Visual Studio Code, which I've probably chosen several times this year alone.
Yeah.
I love Visual Studio Code. The reason I mention it this week is because there's a little bit of news related to it. Microsoft has officially released the non-beta version of its Edge DevTools extension for Visual Studio Code, right? Their approach to adding functionality to Visual Studio Code is to go through extensions, right? So the basic editor itself will always be as lightweight as it can be, given what it is. But if you want to add functionality to it, you can do it through extensions. This is the thing. This is for me personally, because on me, I find this to be comedic. This is the description they said. Well, why do you need this, right? So if you're a web dev, like a lot of the people who use Visual Studio Code are web developers, and whether they're using Chrome or Firefox or Edge, they know that their browser has this full featured set of web development tools built right in. In Edge, they call them sometimes the F12 tools. So if you're in Edge, you can hit F12, you can bring them up, you can see what it looks like. So it is literally those tools, but now it's in the Visual Studio editor in its own pane. Why would you want that, right? Because it's already in the browser. This is what Microsoft says. Why embed the developer tools? Continuously switching between editor and a browser adds cognitive load to your workflow.
Oh, yes. So true. Yes.
That's weird, because I was told if you had two things side by side, that sparked creativity. But now what you're saying is you want it all in one window, because doing it the other way adds cognitive load.
Cognitive load. There's nothing worse.
Wanted to throw that out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what does cognitive load have to do with flow, though?
It's the opposite of flow.
It's the opposite it's a blocker. Of flow.
Yeah.
It's a flow blocker.
It's exactly right. So don't block your flow. Use a single screen like a normal person. Stop trying to tell me I need two screens.
I will say that VS Code is so nice. I'm doing it twice. Two windows side by side. I like the load.
Completely blown away my cognitive load complaints.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I've been using it more because, you know, I'm an Emacs guy. But sometimes you just want to install a plug-in and go. Talk about cognitive load. Emacs. Whew.
Yeah, trying to remember the three letters you have to type to get something to happen or whatever.
Shift yep. X D Y. Yep. So yeah, sometimes you just want to use VS Code. I've been working on Haskell, which has always historically been a difficult language to learn, only because the tool chain is so ridiculous. You can install so much crap, but it actually became very easy.
I bet there's an extension. There's probably a
beautiful Haskell extension
to run all yep. stuff,
and it makes it very straightforward, yep. very easy. It's a big improvement. So no matter what language you write in,
your code is amazing. And yeah. part of the reason it's amazing is it has won over a lot of people who traditionally have been kind of anti-Microsoft, or at least Microsoft ambivalent. It might be the first kind of semi-universal Microsoft app, like that it's just reached all these people who normally would have ignored Microsoft. Yeah. It's cool.
No, they were smart to make it open source. It's a gateway drug for Visual Studio. I love VS Code.
Yeah.
Good. But that's not all. We're not done.
No.
There's a dev pick of the week. Is this Mary Jo's?
It is. There's two, actually.
All over the map today.
We are. So two dev picks. The first is on the very day that Google and Oracle are at the Supreme Court arguing over Java, Microsoft announced it's going to hold a Java conference, which is kind of ironic if you know the history of Microsoft and Java and antitrust. But this is called JDConf, and it is a free virtual digital event that's going to be over 3 days, October 27th, 28th, 29th. So if you do, if you look up JDConf, you'll find Microsoft's splash screen for it. And if you look at the list of speakers, it's very interesting because Microsoft talks about how they themselves use Java internally on a lot of their own services. But the list of speakers also includes people from outside Microsoft. I see somebody from VMware, for example, on the speaker list, among others. So yeah, if you care about Java and you want to hear not just from Microsoft, but from the overall community that Microsoft is now a part of, that's, you might want to check out the JDConf since it's free, especially. Why not?
Nice.
And then my other pick is about JavaScript, not to be confused with Java because it's not the same thing at all, but Microsoft has launched a course. So they're doing these courses in conjunction with their Learn franchise. And they did a Python course recently, multi-part Python course that they made available on YouTube. And now they have a 51-part video course all about JavaScript wow. and Node.js.
Wow. What is
that is available on YouTube. I know. I know.
Are they good? Because I was looking at the Python course. I'm mentoring a high school student, and mm-hmm. one of the things he's doing is learning Python. And I was looking for a good Python course, but I saw the Microsoft course. It looked good.
Yeah. I would guess on Python they would be very good because they're doing a lot of AI stuff themselves and working right. with customers doing AI. So I would think their Python course would be great. And JavaScript, you know, they have TypeScript, but they also do things and have done things with JavaScript themselves. They've got a GitHub page for the JavaScript course, so you can get a lot of information there. And if you want to check it out, it's on YouTube, the Microsoft JavaScript course,
it also
51
looks like
parts.
It's really enterprise dev focused, which is great. So if you want to get a job, this would be a good way to learn. Nice.
Yeah, it's like how to build JavaScript apps with Node.js, how to use text analytics in the client library. There's topics like that. So
it is kind of surprising since Microsoft is all about TypeScript, which is a better JavaScript.
Yeah. Well, it's JavaScript.
It's still JavaScript.
You have to learn JavaScript first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
By the way, every time you put up a web page on the screen, not every time, but oftentimes, I will try to scroll through it with my mouse.
You're
it
like, let me scroll down.
I want to see some more of that. Let me scroll down a little bit.
You're on the video, and I'm like, what's below the video?
Yeah.
It's Tanya.
Oh, there's Tanya. Hi, Tanya. Hi. She used to work here.
Yeah,
she's doing great.
She does a lot of stuff with us now.
I know. CDNet. Good choice. Very good choice. Yep. She's wonderful. Yep. Beginner's Guide to JavaScript. All right. Now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Normally, wait a minute. Code name. Not quick. No. No hurry. I just skipped ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So, the code name pick of the week is it's a little lesson about Microsoft code names and also a bunch of code names. So the website Aggiornamente, I don't know how to pronounce this. It's in Italian. Aggiornamente Lumia. That's their web. That's
Aggiornamente Lumia. Aggiornamente Lumia.
They
good name, have been 10 years ago.
Tracing, I know. They've been tracing a lot of the code names that the Surface team's been using, along with the Walking Cat, too. And they posted a bunch of new ones this week. So the new Bluetooth ergonomic mouse, codename Nora, N-O-R-A. The wireless display adapter, Wakita, which is a town in Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
And Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. And my lesson for you here, that if you don't know this already, is the Surface team is using double code names for things now. One is the engineering code name and one is the marketing code name. And they're doing that to catch leakers.
Oh, so smart. Evil.
They'll know you got it from engineering or you got it from marketing, right?
Wow.
The next one they got, Surface Pro X, the new one, the new ones with the new chips, codename Canon, C-A-N-O-N. And I knew this because Microsoft gave us the draft of their marketing materials before they went live. And I saw the word Canon. I went back to them and I'm like, so Canon's the codename for the new Pro X? And they're like, we're not talking about that. I'm like, well, it's in your marketing materials.
Oops. Oops.
That's awesome.
So yeah, they get rid of that. And then the Surface Laptop Go, Silas is one of the code names, but the other code name was Sparty, S-P-A-R-T-I-C. They both begin with the letter S, but one is an engineering code name and one is marketing.
How interesting. So, that's clever.
Yeah.
But now that we very know, clever. They're going to have to find a new yeah. scheme.
I know. They switch their code names a lot, the Surface team, like to keep you guessing and not like in the know. So they're very crafty with their code
names. They need a code name generator. That's what the military use. You know.
They do.
Yes. Yeah.
And then we could have a code name generator breaker.
Enigma. Yeah. I love it. I love it. All right. Now, normally this would be the portion of the show where Mary Jo Foley would be giving us a pick, a beer pick of the week. And I know you love your beer, but this time Paul's going to do something a little harder.
This is so weird. I just... A little bit of insight into my life here in Pennsylvania is there are people here that make their own alcohol, like at their houses. And one of them is a friend of mine, and he makes some incredible stuff. He makes moonshine and whiskey and rum and all kind of wine, actually, all kinds of stuff. A lot of it is fantastic. He makes a kind of a holiday liqueur called apple pie, which is amazing.
Ooh.
Here's an example. This is a really bad example of one. It's just funny. This is one of his concoctions, and this is literally moonshine.
Don't drink
which is probably,
that.
Yeah,
it's in a scary. It's in a bell jar. That's terrifying.
I know. That's how you know it's homemade.
Oh,
and it's
God.
It's probably some incredible proof. I don't know the exact number because there's no listing here, but it's made literally with candy.
Oh, Jesus! Oh my God!
Right.
Well, anything so, you with know sugar.
Gotta,
in it, we'll
can
ferment.
I just make a suggestion? I need to make a suggestion with that. You got to do the Fleetwood Mac Dreams Challenge on TikTok and drink that out of the jar.
Just suck that down. So actually,
did you
so
see, by the way, Paul so Apodaca, strong. The guy who right. did that, was drinking cranberry juice. He just got a truck loaded with Ocean Spray cranberry juice as a gift from Ocean Spray. Because he's probably sold a lot of cranberry juice.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. So, all right, since Mary Jo mentioned this, I'll say we have some. I should have brought this out. I have it out back, but... We have some of his moonshine. Some of it is so strong, it could kill you. He had a friend come over one time. He poured him like a couple of inches of it in a little glass. The guy, he drank it. He just drank it. And my friend looked at him and he said, "What the hell did he just do?" And he says, "Well, I just drank it." He goes, "You have to go to the hospital."
What?
And he says, "Why?" He says, "He was in the hospital for a week. It killed all of the bacteria in his stomach."
Oh, Jesus,
like, oh, man.
You can't drink it.
Well, what like, are you supposed to do with it?
You mix it with stuff, or you just sip it to kind of.
What does it have? Wood alcohol in it? What the hell is he making?
It's unbelievable. So,
little anyway, Drano.
We also have a state liquor system here in Pennsylvania, and what that means is we can't. There's certain. It's really good, actually, but there's certain things we can't get. So, when we went on this road trip, of course, we're in North Carolina. We drove by a state liquor store, which down there I think is called like ABC or something. And I said to my wife, "We should stop in there before we leave the state because maybe they'll have some stuff that." we can't get here in Pennsylvania, right? So one thing we got just to try it, because I wanted to show it to my friend Don, was like a commercial version of a moonshine, which is like this, which is a, I think this is raspberry or something.
Midnight Moon. I love it that he has the tax seal on it. That really makes it, like, it's still in a bell jar, but it's legal.
Yeah, this is probably illegal. It's 45 proof, I guess, or 45. No, it's 90 proof and 45%, whatever. Anyway, I haven't tried that yet, but I just wanted to, give this to my friend just so he could kind of see what it was like. And then the amusing, this would be a bourbon, except that it wasn't made in Kentucky, so they have to call it something else. But it is literally a whiskey, basically. So we kind of got that. We just got some local stuff.
Paul, have you been doing a lot of drinking lately?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you noticed there's a pandemic going on. So talking to the guy at the state liquor store in North Carolina, and he asked him for local recommendations, and he says to me, he goes, "Do you like peanut butter?" I said, "I love peanut butter." And he goes, "I do too." He goes, "There's a local peanut butter whiskey."
What?
That's pretty good. This he says, pretty good.
Okay.
But he goes, "Actually, it's kind of more of a peanut butter aftertaste." But he goes, "If you really like peanut butter, you got to buy this thing." And this should be available anywhere. It's from California. It's called Screwball Whiskey.
Oh, jeez.
You'll notice it's already half gone. I've only
Somebody likes this. Peanut butter. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love peanut butter. Like, I love peanut butter.
Is this the whiskey like that sticks butter. To the roof of your mouth? Is that the...
This is incredibly dangerous. Like, this is... Because this is actual whiskey. And you could drink it like it was like iced tea. That is...
Oh, boy.
Wow. Oh, man.
If you like peanut butter... So, and the weirder thing, on the way home, so we stopped in Virginia on the way home. And we were originally going to stop in Harrisonburg, but we saw it was like a COVID hotspot because they have kind of a like a college there or whatever. So we found this town. It's called, I keep getting it wrong, not Waterloo, not Waco. It's called something with a W. Anyway.
Waxahachie?
Woodstock. Okay. Woodstock, literally, there's nothing going on in this town. Small town, it's cute, whatever. But it has 0% COVID. There's no COVID. So we actually went out to a restaurant.
Wow.
And they had a drink with this in it. And it was called a peanut butter Russian.
Oh, Jesus.
it was like white Russian, but with
Jello shit. Shot made with that might be really interesting.
Ice cream drinks or things like that. This was it was unbelievable.
This company knows its market. They have a bunch of frat boys sitting on a roof drinking it, which is, by the way, what frat boys do.
Well, after drinking this, I would be up on a roof, too.
An unlikely duo has been born. Wow.
There's literal peanuts in this. If you have an allergy.
Oh, you can't eat it.
Yeah, you can't.
Wow.
Screwball. What's the proof on this? This really, right. This looks like they're really advertising out of control binge drinking, but okay. Get screwed.
I love peanut butter porters, so I would try this actually.
70?
70. It's 35 ABV, so
barely see it.
70 proof. That's not bad.
So you won't be going to the hospital if you take a big sip.
It's
I'm going to chug this like David Lee Roth going after like a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Do it for Eddie. Like, do it for Eddie. You know? Just, you know.
Exactly.
Yep. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Screwball.
Yep, I know. It's crazy.
You know, I can get at my local BevMo apparently, so.
I think it's broadly available. I think it's around. Like, I think you could, a lot of people living in the United States could find this at a local liquor store. If you like peanut butter. And as I said in the notes, if there's like a grape jelly vodka out there, I have an incredible idea for a cocktail.
Oh, man.
PB&J, baby.
Yeah.
If you thought eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich wasn't quick enough, hold on, I have an idea.
There are peanut butter and jelly beers, and they're excellent. I've had a few of them. Yeah. They're good. They're really good.
This thing is a problem. Like, this is way better than it should be.
Apparently, our chat room knows it. They say Screwball is pretty good. It's really smooth too.
It is.
Wow. It's smooth drinking.
It's too smooth.
Go nuts with your Screwball. Friends, Romans, countrymen, we've come to the end of another.
Props.
Yes, exciting. Windows Weekly. That guy over there is Paul Theroux.
we do the show at 11 a.m.
I can sit up straight at this hour
so
of the day.
That he'll be sober.
Yep. Not in the hospital.
Sun's gone over the yacht, Paul. I think it's okay.
It's a pandemic somewhere. Let's start drinking.
You can read his writing at therot.com. He cares so much, he's put himself into traction for you. therrott.com. His book, The Windows 10, A Field Guide to Windows 10, is available at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. They join together every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, to make this thing we call Windows Weekly. You can watch us do it live. There's a number of live streams, audio and video, at twit.tv/live. Gosh, we got to get that twit.live going here. There's twit also, plus. Yeah, it would be perfect. I don't know. I should see if I've registered it. You should get on-demand versions from the website, twit.tv/WW. Windows Weekly has its own YouTube channel. You can catch us there. If you do, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and mash the red bell. Mash it so that you get notifications every time it's available. You know, honestly, the easiest way to do it is to get a podcast program. Overcast, Shoutcast, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, Slacker. And subscribe. Cast no stones, and then subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. This was fun. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.
See, it wasn't much news, but we stretched it out.
We stretched the hell out of that one. That's good. Yeah. Thank you.
I knew I was going to get a good 15 minutes out of the screwball. So,
I think it's so funny they got the kids on the roof, because I swear to God, I went to Father Sunday at my son's frat at CU Boulder.
Please tell me you didn't see that.
A few years ago, and they were up on the roof.
Wow. And, were they drinking screwball?
I don't know what they were drinking, but I thought this is not going to end with...
No.
This is the type of thing that would addict college students. Like, it's really...
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's why drink, it's all sugary and it tastes like a...
I'm not surprised. Like that's the front page is a bunch of college kids on the roof. That's
not exactly my target market, but I guess we have that one. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. We'll see you in a week.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Ta-ta. I'm Jason Howell, host of Tech News Weekly here on twit.tv, along with my co-host, Micah Sargent. Each and every week, we talk to people who are making and breaking the tech news. It could be journalists writing amazing tech stories. It could be experts. It could be the sources of the stories themselves, developers, you name it. We bring them onto the show and we talk to them about why their story is resonating with the world. You can watch and subscribe by going to twit.tv/TNW. Make sure you do that and you won't miss a single episode. We'll see you there.